News today.
George Soros' right-hand man, Howard Rubin, has been arrested for running a sex trafficking operation out of a penthouse turned BDSM sex dungeon. And this is par for the course with these globalists, ladies and gentlemen.
Howard Rubin, a 70-year-old Wall Street stalwart, once with Solomon Brothers Merrill Lynch, where he caused a $377 million loss in 1987, Bear Stearns, and later a Soros Fund management acolyte who rubbed elbows with the globalist puppet master George Soros himself, has been hauled off in cuffs by FBI agents that stormed his Fairfield, Connecticut lair on September 26, 2025.
I'm starting to think that some of these people in high areas of finance are really a problem.
The 10-count federal indictment paints Rubin not as a financial wizard, but as a sadistic trafficker who from 2009 to 2019 weaponized his millions to lure at least a dozen women, many of them ex-Playboy models, into a vortex of coercion, beatings, electrocutions, and restraints that left scars both seen and unseen.
With shocking people and hiring the hitman, it doesn't seem fun anymore. That's not a fetish. It's murder.
Women were allegedly plied with alcohol, Valium, or other drugs to impair consent, then forced to sign NDAs while intoxicated under threats of lawsuits or public exposure. His personal assistant, Jennifer Powers, was nabbed in her South Lake, Texas hideout. She had allegedly orchestrated the logistics and reportedly maintained the dungeon, restocked equipment, structured payments to evade bank reporting, which led to Rubin's bank fraud charge, and took notes on Rubin's satisfaction.
Prosecutors say the pair forced those victims then to sign non-disclosure agreements that put financial consequences on them if they told.
These allegations are very serious. These women allege that he had repeatedly lured them to his penthouse and to other locations under the guise of companionship or conducting photo shoots with him. And when they arrived, they say that he drugged them, gagged them, raped them, beat them, and even so badly in some cases that one of them required reconstructive surgery, another one had broken ribs, and that he covered this up with the help of some of his associates. Now, the plaintiffs say that he violated several laws, including the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act, and also the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, because he created this enterprise to lure them in, abuse them, and then cover it up. And, of course, he is denying all of these allegations and now countering by saying that these women are trying to extort him for money.
These details drawn from the indictment and prior civil suits where Rubin was held liable for $3.85 million in damages to six victims in 2022 underscore a calculated network of coercion that left lasting physical and psychological scars. Brooklyn U.S. Attorney Joseph Nocella didn't mince words. Quote, human beings are not chattel to be exploited for sex and sadistically abused, end quote. A rare federal thunderbolt aimed at the untouchables who treat people like raw sewage. Court docs reveal text messages where Rubin brags to Powers about zapping women with electric toys until their breast implants flipped or binding them in his soundproofed 76th floor lair stocked with whips, chains, and devices. One victim, trafficked to Vegas in 2018, endured such brutality she required medical intervention. Another fled in terror after Rubin twisted her arm. As the news tightens with mandatory minimums of 15 years staring down the barrel toward life in the clink, this saga screams the unvarnished truth. The globalist elite's underbelly is a dungeon of trafficking depravity, all bankrolled by the same cabal that puppeteers our elections and our economy. These are the people embedded in the highest perches of power, unleashing their sick vision upon America. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at TheAlexJonesStore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio by Ezra Levant. And I just realized I don't have a sheet for you to tell everybody where to go, but obviously Rebel News is your outfit there in Canada doing amazing work. And how else can people find you?
Well, that's the main way, rebelnews.com. I'm on X at simply my name, which is Ezra Levant. And we're always doing news that I think is a, sort of a general thematic fit with War Room. I mean, today we had a big story, very exciting, that we think we've discovered an Antifa cell working out of a military base in Montreal, Quebec, which is crazy. You guys have gone ahead and banned it as a terrorist group. They seem to be operating in a military base in Canada. Isn't that nuts?
I saw that. It was funny. I was looking at that story when I learned that you were in town today. So I was like, oh, great. This is, and I got a whole Canada stack here. Yeah. I don't know what the heck's going on in Canada. They're killing ostriches. They're taking the guns. You're all being replaced by Indians. It's like, what is happening up there?
Well, we've covered that ostrich story like crazy. And at first you're thinking, ostriches, what, like, who cares? That's, how's that even news? But I think it's a real echo of COVID authoritarianism. And I think people, there's 400 birds at that ostrich farm, and they're big birds. Like it, and the idea they're going to kill every single one of them, because 250 days ago, some of them got sick and then got better. Now they've got all herd immunity. I think people see a lot of things in there, and they say, okay, this is just like the COVID authoritarians having arbitrary rules that make no sense. They brook no dissent and that are extreme.
Yep.
And there's just so many and junk science and no room for dissent and police. Now the RCMP, that's our FBI coming in because the Canadian Food Inspection Agency is coming to kill these 400 birds, but they'd be roughed up by the locals. So now you got this huge team of actual cops,
right,
that are protecting the food inspection cops. Like it's
become a whole thing.
Someone's used the word ostrich Waco, God forbid.
Oh, no.
But it is crazy out there. And, you know, I mean, ostriches are not the most lovable animal. I mean, they're ugly, they're mean. But they, I think even despite that, people say, don't kill those birds. And, you know, even RFK Jr. has weighed in on the junk science behind it. So ostriches, I know we've got a little website called SaveTheOstriches.com. And it's so hard to get there because it's so in the middle of, you know, the country, you have to drive and take two ferries to get there. Like, it's so remote. But we've got a Starlink and we've got an RV and we're covering. If you want ostrich news, you come to the right place.
I've been seeing it crop up occasionally and I just haven't put the time. I'm just like, there's something going on with the ostriches. I figured they're culling them. I mean, it's, you know, like you said, COVID, but that ties into the, you know, food control system and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly what it is.
I just look at Canada, and I see us 15 years down the line, and it ties into everything. But, you know, you wanted to come and take calls from the audience, and I think it was your idea to call it Ask a Jew or something like that. And obviously, this topic just dominates conversation. And in a way, I feel like I'm sort of the perfect person to discuss this because I grew up around Jews, and you made this point with Alex, and I think it's a very pertinent one. A lot of people out there literally never met a Jew in their life. All they know is Benjamin Netanyahu on TV or whatever. When you spend time around Jewish people, I've been to more Jewish weddings and birthdays and funerals and everything, and you get an appreciation for their culture and an understanding of like sort of the perspective that might characterize most Jews, it's a lot harder to characterize all of them as one thing or all of them as another. Even, you know, I was on Stu Peter's show, and I was saying, well, I grew up around tons of Jews. And he said, they might have seemed nice, but if you had said Jesus Christ in their house, they would have kicked you out. And it's like, dude, half of them are married to Gentiles and celebrate Christmas. What are you talking about? Like, they just don't know what they're talking about.
Well, and that's the thing. That's completely not true. I'm Jewish. I was one of four kids. We had big, you know, holiday meals. Saying Jesus Christ, in fact, the reason we wouldn't say that is we would be worried that if you say Christ is a swear, you would offend Christians. Mm. I was raised not to say that because it could be offensive to take the Christian Savior's name in vain to the ears of Christians.
Mm.
So that's just complete bullshit from Stu Peters, who, you know what? I think he has his contrarian hat on and he's turned it to full. And I think he trades in misinformation. And that's what gets me. On the one hand, a lot of Americans only know Jews from the internet, and mm-hmm. so they know Rabbi Shmuley,
right.
who is a disgrace.
I cracked it when you said that on Alex's
and,
show.
And, of course, the censors,
yep.
who are either official Jews, like Jonathan Greenblatt, who's doing it in the name of Jews, and I really resent that because it's not in my name, or who are not doing it in the name of Jews but just happen to be Jewish, and that bugs me, too. Why does he have to be a Jewish censor? I mean, obviously, there are non-Jewish censors, too, but it sort of sticks when it's a Jew.
Mm.
And I don't know. I think that I see so many, but there's people of good faith who have questions
mm-hmm.
About tiny things. Like you just raised a tiny thing. Can you say the word Jesus Christ in a Jewish home? And Stu Peters says you'll get kicked. That's complete bullshit.
But you know, it is true for some, right? I mean, and this has always been my thing is, when you know a lot of Jews, it's like, okay, some of them are sort of just Jewish in name and really don't give a damn. And then you have sort of Jewish extremists that are driven by a different, you know, religious understanding or whatever.
Well, listen, what I want to do, here's what I'd love to do. And listen, it's your show. But what we started doing on Alex's show was taking calls. And I really, you know, I'd love to hear what's really on people's minds. And I'm going to try and answer them. I'm going to try not to jump on people too hard. And I'm going to try and give a real answer because my experience is that if someone has a real question, like how do you know 6 million Jews died? How do you know it wasn't 5 million or 7 million? How do you know? And if you jump on that person and say, you're anti-Semitic, shut up, we're going to suspend you on Twitter or whatever, you haven't answered the question.
You really just made it worse.
And you have confirmed that this is such a sensitive thing, the truth is being kept. I mean, you know, I was at the 9/11 Museum in Manhattan. Have you ever gone there?
I never have, actually. No.
Can I really recommend it to you? And it was a very powerful tour. And the tour guide was a local. It was, I mean, he works there, but it felt like he was more a neighborhood guy. Like, it was. I learned so much. And then he opened it up for questions. Well, what kind of questions do you think there were?
Oh, yeah.
Every theory, every alternative theory, every critical theory, including some zany theories. And I thought, uh-oh. Well, you think that's his first time hearing those? He hears those every day. And he was asked about steel and can jet fuel. That's the one that was asked when I was there. And he gave an answer so calmly and in my mind so persuasively. And I thought, holy smokes, had he been sensitive and said, how dare you? Not only would it have not educated the woman, and I don't know if she took his answer at face value. I was pretty persuaded by it.
Right.
But he would have given her, because having secret knowledge is one of the delights of a conspiracy theory. I know something that you don't know and that you're not allowed to know. I'm part of an elite a priesthood that knows what's really going on. That's right. One of the allures of any conspiracy theory is that you have special knowledge. And I feel it too. I feel like sometimes when we have a revelation on something and you, hey, everybody, you're all doing it wrong. I got the secret truth. And, you know, once in a while, I suppose that's true. But with Jews and Israel, there's so many rumors out there, such BS. I think the right approach is to do your best to answer it. Sometimes the answers aren't great answers. Like, if you're asking me to defend the actions of 15 or 20 million people, how could I? Over the course of thousands of years. Well, of course, over the course of thousands of years, some atrocious things were done by every culture, by every religion. how about this quirk in this? How about this Talmud section that says that? Well, you know what? You ever look at other religious practices from Islam to Jehovah's Witnesses to more? Like, if the game we're playing is find something weird in the religious practices of different religions, you'll be busy. So I cannot defend every Jew in history and every Jew in the world. But what I can do is appeal to the good faith of InfoWars users and say, don't buy into collective guilt. If a Jew did something, it must have been the Jews who did it. And I always say, think of Stephen Miller in your mind.
Yeah.
Think of the greatest staffer in the White House. Is he not a model American, and is he not doing more than most cabinet ministers to make America great again? And I say this as a Canadian, but boy, I'm jealous of that. So don't say the Jews. If there's someone, like, we were just looking in the news today about that, that financier friend of
Howard, whatever.
Who was charged with sex dungeons and stuff. And he sounds like his last name is Jewish, which I hate. Okay, was it an essentially Jewish thing he did? Was it a religious thing he did? Was it, or did he just happen to be a Jew doing something disgraceful, which embarrasses Jews, I suppose, but was it really a Jewish thing? I mean, there was a caller earlier on Alex's show, what about the facts that the Jews, by being left-wing, earn anti-Semitism? Wait a second, was it a Jewish thing, or were they just leftists? And I think that, I would hope, and let's get into it. Let's take as many calls as possible. I would hope that your viewers and that InfoWar viewers would still believe in treating people as individuals and not saying a Jew did something so all Jews are culpable.
Right.
And I would hope that they wouldn't use Jews as a scapegoat for other things in their own life that maybe there's a more painful answer for. Why aren't I getting ahead? Why did something go wrong in my life? Why don't I have the motivation to fix certain things? Why can't I do this or that? The Jews, the universal absolution for, you don't have to take responsibility for your own lives. It's those Jews who did it. I had a flat tire today. Oh, those Jews, you know? So my hope is that, you know, Woody Allen apparently told a joke. What's anti-Semitism? It's disliking Jews more than is absolutely necessary.
He was
a self-deprecating Jew. The arguments that the Jews used to be so proud of Jewish excellence. How many Jews won a Nobel Prize? How many Jews have written books or music? Steven Spielberg. I mean, the Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, how many Jews have done, but that doesn't win arguments now because that just goes to, oh, you see, they control. There's so many Jewish communities. You see, they control Hollywood. There's so many Jews who are, you see, they control. They're powerful. So trying to make an argument that Jews are a net positive, they're positive to the economy, they're positive to science. How many Nobel Prize those arguments don't work anymore, do they? Because, oh, you see, they're running the world. Yeah. You know, telling us you're powerful doesn't convince us you're not powerful. All I would say is don't blame all Jews because someone who may not even regard themselves as Jewish. Like, you think, as I said to Alex, you really think Alex Soros?
Well, I guess maybe that would be a good place to start, because I think you're right that, you know, a lot of it has to do with the way that the questions are just absolutely shut down. And again, that's why I say I think I'm sort of in a unique position to do this, because I totally get why people have the questions that they have and why they get mad when they're not answered. So I want to put those to you, you know, at least some of them. But again, I don't do it from a place of ignorance of Jews or of hatred for Jews, obviously. So, you know, when it comes to, I guess the question is, what is a Jew? That's one thing that, like, nobody seems to nobody can define. Is it a religion? Is it a race? I mean, how do you define whether somebody is a Jew or not? And I just say, well, if they say they are, they are. That's as basically as deep as I can get it, because other than that, there doesn't seem like a lot of strict definitions.
You know, and it's actually a very profound question you ask, because Israel is a country.
Mm-hmm.
Their symbol is the Star of David. But if you see someone on the street with a Star of David in Austin or in New York,
they might hate Israel.
Well, probably they don't hate Israel, but they're not saying I'm Israeli. They're saying I'm Jewish. So you have a religion that is also a state, but you can convert to become a Jew. You can convert to the religion, although Jews generally try to dissuade you. I don't know if you know that, but rabbis try to tell you not to do it. No, you don't want to do this. Like, they're not evangelists.
Right.
But it's also inheritable.
Right.
There's Jews of different races. Believe it or not, there's Ethiopian Jews.
Right.
If you've ever been to Israel, I think you would be shocked by how multiracial it is. There's a lot of Jews from Arab lands who, after Israel was founded, they were all kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to Israel, the one place that would take them. There used to be hundreds of thousands of Jews in Libya, Iraq, Syria, Yemen.
Right.
You know, can you imagine? There used to be an enormous number of Jews. They all went to Israel. And so you have different colors and different races, I suppose, but they're all Jewish. Then you got the Russian Jews who came, you know, in the last 40 years. So it's a tough one. Is Israel an ethnostate? Well, sort of, in that anyone around the world, there's a law called the Law of Return.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Jew, you can go to Israel. And that's sort of a leftover from when Jews couldn't flee anywhere.
Right.
And one of the contradictions in anti-Semitism is, Jews, get out of Israel. That's Palestinian. Go back to Poland. Jews, get out of Europe. Go to...
Right.
I think there's three ways of determining what is your ethnic homeland. And I spend time in wonderful places, and I think about it a lot. Like, I think about the word indigenous. We don't use it enough for the indigenous English, the indigenous Irish. But are they not? They've been there for centuries, and they are rooted to the land, their ethnicity. And you don't want to be racist, but can anyone become Irish? Well, it's a tough question, and maybe it's not my right to answer. But I think that Israel has three things going for it. It's historically, like, thousands of years ago, as told in the Bible, it was historically the indigenous people. They also were granted it in a legalistic situation by the United Nations. And finally, they won it in wars, which is how a lot of countries get their territory. So you could say Israel exists by not one, but three different methods or standards, which is probably more than a lot of countries that are divvied up by some decolonialization.
Right.
Anyhow, well, go ahead.
Well, no, yeah, well, and you're right. And then, of course, you get into the colonial aspect and the fact that the left sees everything in this very simple paradigm of oppressor versus oppressed, white versus brown.
They used to root for the Jews. You know, when Israel was founded, it was very socialist.
Right.
And, you know, kibbutzes were actually communes.
Right.
And they weren't totalitarian, but they were communistic economic projects. And the Soviets voted at the UN to help create Israel.
Right.
And for the first 20 or so years, Israel was not a close ally of America. I mean, it was the America that really helped more and more. And it wasn't until the 1967 war that I think Israel really got strength and was no longer pushed around. And it was sort of a miraculous war. It called the Six-Day War in 1967. Five or six Arab countries were defeated. And that's when the left sort of flipped on Israel. And the left liked Jews when they were on their knees bleeding after the Holocaust. There was a lot of sympathy for Jews. But as soon as Jews were the tough guys with a strong army, a lot of the left lost their sympathy. They like underdogs, and suddenly the Jews refused to be underdogs. And I think the strength of the Palestinian movement over the last generation has been they have managed to convince people, and they would say, honestly, I would be skeptical about that, that Israel is the oppressor and they are the oppressed. And that's what has been Israel's great Achilles heel in this war. Israel dominates in every possible way other than when you're too strong, you look like a bully.
Well, there's that, but then there's also the fact that, like, right now there's a lot of anti-Semitism rules being passed in America and stuff like that, and a lot of time that's predicated on this sort of assumption that Jews need extra protection and they're in this very sort of fragile state. And so there's a contradiction there of, actually, the Jews are really strong, we don't need your help, but also if you don't, you know, censor people, then it's going to be dangerous for us. So there's a contradiction there that I think grates on people.
You're exactly right. And it's very tough to believe in free speech for people you don't like. That's the toughest thing, isn't it? But freedom of speech is the thing. It's the gift you have to give to your opponents if you want it for yourself. And
well, it's worth it, right? I mean, that's always been my thing is like, yeah, people are going to say offensive things. They might say things that really upset you. But what you get for that in return is the ability to think your own thoughts. Isn't that worth it, a little insulted?
You know, I brought something I was going to show Alex, but I forgot about it. And I put it in my pocket. Can I show you?
Yeah.
You know, maybe I shouldn't do this, but I wanted to talk to him about freedom of speech. And I just forgot that I had put this in my pocket. This, I don't know if you can see it. Let me hold it up there. It says E2R. That's Elizabeth Regina. That's Queen Elizabeth II. And let me open it. I've never worn this, but this is a medal given to me. It's the Queen's Jubilee Medal.
Wow.
For advancing freedom of expression.
Oh, that's beautiful. Here, can we put that over here? We can get
yeah,
the,
and
get
I've never worn it because it? It's not a military medal, and it feels a little bit like it's not stolen valor for me to wear this. I was awarded it, but I would never wear this because I didn't serve in the military. But I think about this, and I think that freedom of speech is a core pillar of the West. And when I received this, I was very moved by it, and I felt like it affirmed what I was doing. And I got this because, you know, some years ago, I'd say almost 20 years ago now, I republished the Danish cartoons of Mohammed in a magazine I had. And this was 2006 when you were just a tadpole. But I published it.
I was driving by then.
I was hit with a complaint by something called the Alberta Human Rights Commission.
Oh, yeah.
But it was not a human rights commission. It was a censorship commission.
Oh, we know about them.
And I was put through this 900-day ordeal because I published cartoons.
Right.
And I didn't publish them in a way that said, I agree with them. It was like how a prosecutor would put an exhibit to the jury. Here's exhibit A. Here's what we're talking about. It was a magazine. I could show people. If it was radio, I'd have to paint a picture
yeah.
with words. So I showed our people what all the fuss was about. The New York Times didn't. The Wall Street Journal didn't. We were the only paper in Canada that did. And I got hit with this human rights complaint. And I thought, oh, this is a joke. It'll be gone in a second. No. 900 days.
Wow.
And halfway through, I mean, my legal bill in the end was about $100,000. But halfway through, the Human Rights Commission said to me, if you give this guy a full page, like there was a Muslim imam from Pakistan who had complained. If you give him a full page in your magazine that you can't edit other than for typos and pay him, I think it was like $8,000, we'll let you go.
Wow.
I said, I'd rather shut the whole thing down. And it was quite a thing. And this was really, the internet was fairly new back then.
This was 20 years ago. Yeah, that's wild.
And YouTube had just been invented and PayPal had just been invented. So I was interrogated by this government bureaucrat and we managed to negotiate that we would make a record of the interrogation. We didn't say video camera. So she walks into my lawyer's office and we have a video. I don't know if your friends can Google it really quickly on YouTube, Ezra Levant Human Rights Commission. I look a lot younger. I had more hair, was darker. You might get a kick out of it, but they said to me, why did you publish those Danish cartoons of Mohammed? And I don't want to take up too much time on this, but it's a story that shaped the course of my life. Now, I published those cartoons, and I probably did 100 media interviews. And when people said, why did you publish those? I tried to give the most reasonable answer I could. It's a central artifact of the news story. We live under Queen Elizabeth's laws, not Sharia law. It was the huge subject around the world. There were dozens. Yeah, this is it here. Look at me. Look how young I look. That's Shirlene McGovern, who was grilling me. Turn up the sound if you can.
Here, the crew can pull that in. We can play because we're about to go to break in a minute.
Oh.
So what was your reason at the end of the day for posting it?
I just told you the reasons that I gave the public because I'm trying to sound super reasonable and win hearts and minds.
Right.
But when the government asks you, you can't try and minimize what you did. You can't bargain with the state. And I said, and maybe you guys can find it, I said, I reserve the right to be maximally offensive. I'm not going to try and bargain with you and convince you. You are the state. And if you're saying that my freedom turns on my answer, then my only reply is because it's my bloody right to do so.
Exactly. And, well, because they said I shouldn't. That's why. Because I remember that exactly. And I remember at the time going, I don't even want to draw Muhammad, but that guy's telling me he's going to blow me up if I do. So now I have to because he's telling me I can't. So I didn't even want to before, but now I do. And again, I think that spirit informs a lot of what's going on the right now when it comes to Jews.
We'll talk more
about
that.
You're saying I can't say this. I'm going to say it even more.
Exactly. And shame on the ADL for creating that.
Oh, we'll get into the ADL on the other side. We'll be right back, folks. Ezra Levant in studio.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well.
And yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
I do subscribe to the Methylene Blue. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the Methylene Blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now.
I must say that it does a damn good job.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the Methylene Blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at TheOliveShowStore.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new flash sale, just like we did with Ultra Methylene Blue. Buy one, get one free. Ultimate Creatine Powder. This is private labeled from one of the top certified companies in the U.S. that has their patented micro creatine for higher level absorption. You want to be healthy, have clarity, lose weight, have way better stamina, better workouts. Even if you're not into working out, you're going to love creatine, ladies and gentlemen. And I know this is, I'm not, you know, selling something that I'd known here. But why aren't you taking creatine? Every time I forget to take it over the years, I'm like, why am I not taking creatine? And we've got the best. You get your free bottle of Ultimate Creatine Powder now. That's right. Buy one bottle of Ultimate Creatine and get another one free for a limited time only. Strengthen your body and sharpen your mind with Ultimate Creatine Powder, our microized creatine monohydrate powerhouse. Enhance strength and muscle growth. Improve mental stamina, increase workout intensity, accelerated recovery. And if it's good for working out, it's good for everything. Get yours now at theoliveshowstore.com. And don't miss out because Ultimate Creatine is selling out fast. This buy one, get one free offer could end any moment. Yeah. Just like we did the buy one bottle of Ultra Methylene Blue Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. They don't have a lot of this, but they can get it more quickly. But it's close to selling out. But every couple of days this week, we're going to have buy one, get one free of some of the best-selling products. Get Ultimate Creatine. But I'm telling you, the big sleeper. People bought a lot of it. Now the reviews are coming in. Now people are buying a lot of it. And that's our bovine colostrum, one of the strongest brands out there. And it's 2,000 milligram per serving. It just does miraculous things. Get yours now at theoliveshowstore.com and keep us on the air.
Now, back to our program.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go there today. Purchase a product. You will not regret it. The products are absolutely amazing, and you support incredible content like this. I'm in studio with Ezra Levant, of course, of Rebel News, an amazing outlet. And what we're talking about, we're going to take calls. We're going to go out to calls here momentarily. They're racking them up right now, and we'll go to those in just a second. I was sort of writing down notes as you were talking to Alex because, again, you know, I grew up around a lot of Jewish people. I know the extremist Jews. I know the Jews that don't really care that much about it at all. And what's the cliche where they say, you know, two Jews go in a room and three opinions come out, something like that. Like it's an incredibly intellectually diverse group of people. But people don't really know how to deal with that, especially when you have the likes of Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL claiming to speak for everybody of the Jewish faith or the Jewish ethnicity or however you want to define it. And I always call Jonathan Greenblatt our self-appointed Jewish overlord. He decided he's the one that gets to decide what everybody says. And I just try to stay consistent. I wouldn't be okay with Catholics having this amount of power. I wouldn't be okay with Protestants having this amount of power. I'm not okay with Jews having this amount of power. And to me, there's something when I try to just have a principled stance that I apply regardless of the, you know, I don't want a foreign nation involved. If it's Israel, great. If it's Mexico, great. I don't care. It's a foreign nation as far as I'm concerned. I feel like that confuses people. People want me to either be anti-Jew or a Mossad agent, and they can't handle that, like, genuinely, I got nothing against Jews, but I see a threat from to my First Amendment coming from people who are claiming to act on the behalf of all Jews. I mean, how do you deal with that and the power of the ADL or AIPAC or any of these groups?
On Alex's show, we ran a video, I don't know if you saw it, of every year I go to Davos at the World Economic Forum, not as an invited guest. They won't let us in. We're on.
No, they try to stop you, actually. We always report on the way you're getting pulled over. And...
Yeah, it's we've tracked down on the streets Larry Fink of BlackRock, Albert Bourla of Pfizer. So we basically are outside, and we try and find these oligarchs and scrum them.
Uh-huh.
And once in a while, they actually stop, walk, and talk with us. But mostly, they just try and hustle out of there. Anyways, my colleague, Avi Yamini, bumped into... Yeah, that was a fun one there. That was when Larry Fink was there. He tried to scare us by taking out his cell phone and snapping pictures of our faces. And we walked with him for a long time. I don't think he had ever been talked back to in his life. I felt daggers the way he was looking at us.
You pierced the veil. You know, you're not supposed to even be there.
You know what? My heart was pumping. I forgot to mention that, as you know, the man who shot Donald Trump's ear was in a BlackRock corporate video. So who knows who I'm dealing with there? Who knows if they've got, anyways. That's what we do. But one of the people we bumped into at Davos was Jonathan Greenblatt. Mm. My colleague, Avi Yamini, who's Jewish like I am, scrummed him. And I don't know if you guys have that video. It's about 2 minutes and it might be worth watching. Do you guys have that video? I gave it to Daria, who used it on the, And you know what? I could explain what Avi said in 5 minutes, or he can show it himself in two. It's my view. And I'll say it while you guys are loading it up. What bugs me about Jonathan Greenblatt is that he said, I'm the official Jew. I'm doing this on behalf of Jews. What I am doing is Jewish censorship. I'm the boss of the Jews. No one voted me for this position.
Right.
You use the word, I forget what you said, but I say official.
Self-appointed Jewish overlord.
I use the word official Jews, capital O, capital J, TM. And I'm thinking, no, I'm Jewish too. And you can't do that. And I see through it because I'm Jewish and I know you don't speak for me. So your Jedi mind tricks don't work on me because I see your BS.
Right.
And what you're actually doing, former senior Obama aide, is you are weaponizing the word anti-Semitism to silence critics of the left. And like a knife that is dulled by overuse, when anti-Semitism finally does arrive, no one will believe you because you called every conservative anti-Semitic. Here, if you don't mind, I'd love to play this with volume up.
I don't think I've ever actually seen it.
It's just 2 minutes long. It's really worth it if you guys can play it.
We always follow your reporting at Davos. I definitely remember the Larry Fink one. I don't know if I've ever seen this one. Let's pull this one in.
How are you doing, Jonathan?
Good.
Can I ask you something?
I'm meeting somebody. I'm sorry.
I'll walk with you. Are you like that, the boy who cried wolf?
Are you?
For so many years, you cried anti-Semitism and you found hatred everywhere. And then finally, Avi Yamini from Rebel News.
What's Rebel News?
Rebel News. It doesn't matter. But finally now, when the world has turned so anti-Semitic, no one believes us because of people like you and the work you've done over so many years. Destroying our allies, making lists about our allies, people that actually defend us. You've been a big part of that problem, haven't you? Do you know the boy that cried wolf?
I'm not familiar with the story. Why don't you?
He's not familiar with
Jonathan,
the story.
It's not a joke because the Jews around the world, we are feeling the pain and you've alienated so many of our allies. What about Elon Musk? Somebody that's been so good? No, you got a message for Elon? Thank you, Jonathan. There you go. Nothing to say. Censorship in real life. I bet you I'm going to be on a list tomorrow. Jonathan Greenblatt is
that's extremely good. You know what? I always refer to Jonathan Greenblatt. I used to do it more where I would just refer to him as a different name because to me it's like, you know, you read a headline, Jonathan Greenblatt condemns. And it's like, it might as well say Michael Smith. Like, who is this guy? Yeah. He's literally nobody. Well, he's condemning. Great.
What gets me is that he's doing it. He's using my reputation, my name, my history, and thousands of years of history, he is pretending to the world that this is a Jewish project. When I put it to you, it's a left-wing project, using Judaism as the tactic. And it's doubly effective. It puts people of good faith on the back foot. No, I'm not. No, let me be defensive and explain to you that I'm not. And I don't know. I find it an odious approach. And there's other people out there that do things in the name of all Jews. And that's one of my messages to viewers of InfoWars is, can you please do me the personal favor, as someone who's been in this battle, this information war, for 35 years, and who shares your values of fighting against, like, look at us. We're there in Davos scrumming these guys. Like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
it's fun, but that's doing good work too. You know, we're with the truckers and then we crowdfunded their legal defense.
Right.
We're in the UK with Tommy Robinson crowdfunding his legal defense when they try and silence him. We were really the only people who in a serious way opposed the COVID lockdowns in Canada. So we're doing all the same things you're doing. Can you do me the favor and judge me for who I am? Rather than say, okay, you're a Jew, and Greenblatt's a Jew, and Rabbi Shmuley is a Jew, therefore, do me the one favor. Don't say the Jews.
Right.
Because it's not the Jews. It's some Jews. It's a Jew. And I put it to you, in some cases, it's a Jew who's really turned off the Jewish, he flipped the switch off, hasn't been to synagogue since his bar mitzvah. You know, to him, being Jewish is he has a bagel once in a while. And this goes to your question, what is a Jew? If someone is a vestigial Jew, an ex-Jew, a lapsed Jew, do I still have to bear some of the communal guilt? Like Jeffrey Epstein, one of the worst people that anyone has ever heard of. How I curse the fact that his name is Epstein. And was what he was doing essentially Jewish in character? No. It was a honey trap. It was an extortion racket that clearly was linked to different intelligence agencies.
Yeah.
But do I have to pay the price for that because he's a Jew? I can't tell you how badly I hate the fact that he's a Jew. But as I said to Alex earlier today, you look at Anthony Fauci, AOC, Nancy Pelosi, no one says, look what the Catholics are.
Right.
They just wouldn't say that because there's Catholic, because you also got Anthony Scalia, and you got there's for every Catholic on the left, there's a Catholic on the right, some on the very right. And so no one would ever say those Catholics, the Catholics. I mean, some people would say that, but.
Oh yeah. You should hear some of our callers. Yeah?
Sure.
There
is some anti-Catholic bigotry and there's some anti-Protestant bigotry, and I don't get it, but I think that that's a little nutty. And,
well, I'd say it's a little bit different because the AOC doesn't often predicate what she's doing on her Catholicness, which is what Jonathan Greenblatt does.
Right, but neither did Epstein.
To be speaking for
Greenblatt's the worst of them all.
Yeah.
Because
I know. It's like totally unfair to relate you to Jonathan Greenblatt.
Epstein never said, I'm a Jew, 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 Jew.
Right.
What I'm doing is Jewy, Jewy, Jewy. He never does that.
Well, that's where it intersects with Israel being a foreign state with its own intelligence operations that is obviously considers itself a Jewish state. And actually, I think that, again, when it gets to sort of the frustrations that we're seeing sort of bubble over on the internet right now, I think a lot of it has to do with sort of inconsistency or hypocrisies that we see, not even from Jewish people, but from people, from right wingers, in Congress. It's almost like Israel gives them this license to be hardcore about something, but they'll never do it for Americans, right? When it comes to Israel, it's like, where you're just going to go kill everybody. I'm talking about Lindsey Graham or Ted Cruz. It's like something about Israel gives them the license to go hardcore and almost be, support an ethno state, support identity, where everywhere else it's interacted. It's, oh, well, we can't do that. And well, let's walk carefully here. It's like, well, they never feel that way with Israel. So there's an inconsistency there that, again, I think grates on people. It grates on me because I see so much being done for Israel by our federal government that they will never do for us. So there's,
okay,
you know what I mean?
I don't know what you mean. So I'd like you to unpack that last sentence.
I will.
I see so many things that our government is doing for Israel.
Yeah.
Give me a list of three.
Well, okay. So one primary example would be like the university presidents being pressured and some of them being fired.
Is that Israel that's doing that?
Well, yeah. Well, it's because they wouldn't crack down on anti-Israel protests on their campuses.
Okay. So university presidents, and what's number two?
The TikTok ban would be another one.
What's the TikTok ban?
I think TikTok was banned because there was a lot of anti-Israel content going out, and they now have a IDF soldier sort of overseeing them. And, as Alex was talking about, the Bibi Netanyahu thing, calling it an eighth front.
Okay, what's the third thing?
Third thing would be like protecting our border versus, you know, sending weapons to Israel, and how, you know, willing we are. Like, you'll have the same people in our government say it's immoral to close the border. We have to allow people in, but they're, you know, hardcore about, you know, Israel's border.
I'm going to add a fourth one, which is the $3 billion a year in military aid to Israel.
Well, I don't like that. But it's more about, okay, we for a decade have been going, hey, these universities are teaching anti-white stuff.
Right.
They've got entire classes called, you know, the problem with whiteness and how to eradicate it. We can never even get a congressman to even acknowledge us, let alone do something.
Sure.
Then when it becomes, oh, there's anti, you know, there's pro-Palestine protest on the campus, suddenly the federal government is like going to shut the school down if they don't immediately do something. And so again, it's not even, it's almost like if we were getting everything we want and that was happening, I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the inconsistency of the federal government when it comes to serving the American people. Our hands are tied. Gee, we'd love to, but just we can't. And then when it comes to something Israel wants, it's like, boom, it's done. Because TikTok's another good example. Trump's first administration, they tried a TikTok ban, didn't go anywhere. I don't even think it went to a vote. Nothing happened. Then you've got Nikki Haley going up and saying, every 15 minutes you spend on TikTok, you're 30% more anti-Semitic or whatever it was. And it's like TikTok gets banned 2 weeks later. So again, it's not even necessarily the things that are happening. It's the discrepancy between the speed and power with which the federal government will move when it comes to Israel's something that benefits Israel. But when it comes to Americans, we cannot get any benefits out of our government.
Sure. I've got thoughts on all four of those, if I may.
Sure.
The first is on the university president. I never heard of that phrase as an Israel favor before.
Mm.
I mean, there is anti-Semitism on campuses. And in my observation, it's in substantial part from foreign students, not American citizens, but foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is a twofold thing. I think this is how to get those deportation numbers up.
Right.
And frankly, being pro-Hamas, I put it to you, I mean, that is anti-Jewish, and I suppose it is anti-Israel, obviously, but it's also a proxy for being anti-Western. And I mean, there's been some of these people who have been caught up in this dragnet. I mean, could you have a blatantly anti-black protest at a campus that got federal funds? Like, if it was just as anti-black as these are anti-Jewish?
Mm.
I don't think so. But I saw that as a way for the White House to get foreign nationals who are here to undermine and, basically foreign radicals, to get them out. Didn't apply to American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of like that just as a deportation move of getting Hamas types out. I don't know. I never thought of it as a favor to Israel. I thought of it as a way to get the radicals out of these schools. I don't know. Maybe you're saying I'm not disputing what you're saying. I mean,
it didn't feel like
an Israel move. It felt like a get the bad people out of America move.
Well, with the Harvard one, it was even before that, because they predicated on her, you know, being a DEI supporter or plagiarizing or something. But, you know, that's sort of just the excuse. But really, it was, you know, because they wouldn't crack down the Palestinian protest. And like, you know,
it wasn't really the Palestinian protest. Was it a anti-Jewish? And there's a different thing. And you say, well, look at my special pleading for the Jews. No, if it was like, I have to believe, and I do believe, that if the kind of crazy anti-Jewish stuff that, I mean, I went to Columbia to check it out. I went to the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York when it happened there. Like, I went to some of these schools. I went to University of Toronto, my own country. It was crazy. And I thought to myself, what if they swapped in the word black for Jews or Israel? Would that be allowed?
Well,
and I don't think so. Like, I think that would be a National Guard moment.
Well, you know, I agree with you, but what if they swiped the word Jew for white? I think it would still get federal funds and nobody would care.
But I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I mean,
like I said, it's not even necessarily that it's like, why is the government doing this for them? It's like, why can we not get anything done for us when Israel can get something
done? I think
done
the Trump
them?
Administration is going absolutely full tilt against DEI.
Yeah.
So the same administration that's going after Columbia and Harvard for their anti-Jewish, I think it does violate civil rights. I could be wrong. They're also going after DEI. They're also going after Harvard on admissions. So I think they are. I mean, you're the American here. Would you not agree that Trump has been, like, I think he even uses, like, having even the symbolic Boer farmers from South Africa come as refugees.
That was amazing. That was beautiful.
Like, don't you think that's symbolic of this administration?
But this is, I think this is one of the things I see, because, like, Avi Yemeni, amazing video we just saw. I've always been a big fan of him. He's very fearless and just goes sort of right into the lion's den. I really appreciate and respect that. But, you know, I've seen him in Australia, sort of, you know, trying to argue against or stand up against the national, I guess they're the National Socialists there, whoever it is. And I feel like there's a lot of times where white people in particular, Christians, Native, you know, Americans and Europeans want to stand up for themselves against the Muslim immigration, against, you know, being swamped. And a lot of times it's Jewish people that are going, whoa, 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 we're going down a dangerous road here. Nazism lies at the end of it. And so then they're.
I know Abby pretty well, and I think he shares my view against immigration.
Mm.
I think there were some actual Nazis there. That rally, if it's the same right. rally, and if it's the same rally we're talking about, the one that happened about a month ago, that was a pro-Australia anti-immigration rally.
Mm.
It was an anti-immigration rally.
Right.
And it was a mass rally. And then there were like 15 Nazis who, on this one occasion, didn't have their armbands, so they could sort of sneak in and say, this is our big event. And they actually managed to get some press. Oh my God, the Nazis have 100,000 people. No, they had 12 and they were driven out by the others. I don't think Rebel News or me or Avi could possibly be called open borders or like I just think you may have misapprehended.
Well, so then how do like Europeans advocate for themselves without like you know,
you don't have to be a Nazi to call for the end of immigration.
Well, but if you know are explicitly saying we are white, we want to live around white people, that is interpreted as a Nazi.
Well, I mean, I suppose you have to you know be thoughtful about your wording. I've been in Ireland a half dozen times in the last year and a half. It's an amazing country. It's a very small country, 5 million souls. And I love using the phrase indigenous Irish because they've been there for centuries.
Literally what they are. Yeah.
And mass immigration is happening so quickly that how could it be taken as anything but replacement migration? And I just threw out a document here. Where did I have it? That's not a conspiracy theory.
It's on the UN. Yeah, it's a 21-page thing.
Yeah, it's an actual, absolutely. Like it's a thing. And by the way, leftist politicians often boast of it as a thing. And there's different, I guess there's different ways in saying it. And you have to be thoughtful and you have to win people over. I was in Ireland. And I was in the midst of a protest of 30,000 people against mass immigration. Not a single media organization supported them. Not a single mainstream political party supported them. And yet 30,000 in a country the size of Ireland is quite something to see. I did bump into one actual Nazi there. I don't know if you...
I think I've seen that video, yeah.
And I
don't want to talk to
him. And I just went right up to him because the police were picking on some guy. I had no idea who he was. I go up to him and say, what do the police have to say to you? I don't talk to Jews. You know, it's actually a hell of a hell of a video if your friends want to pull it up.
Yeah.
And I just said, what? I thought you hit yourself, you're just like, okay.
It's weird.
Like I was there as an ally of like, I was there to give our Rebel News is, you know, we got 1.8 million YouTube subscribers. It's not as big as you guys, but we're big-ish. And they didn't have any media coverage, I don't know a lot about Ireland, but I'm learning. So I go there as a friend, and I got 100 people just really happy to see me. And this one guy who actually said he was a National Socialist, I don't talk to Jews. The Jews have done no, buddy, I'm just like, for God's sakes, it's like I was saying to Alex, it's like the Rorschach inkblot. Jews, mm-hmm. Jews. It's not always a Jewish thing. I just came over. In fact, I was out of concern. Like the cops had zeroed in on this guy, and I'm a free speech guy, and I was like, "What were they picking you on?
Right.
You Jew." I mean, so my point to you is, maybe don't be so frickin' crazy.
Yeah.
And this guy thinks that the Irish are at any time going to rise up and support him and make him their Führer or something. No, they're not, because you're an idiot. And how about just be smarter about it? Let me quickly go to your other issues. TikTok. You know, until 5 minutes ago, TikTok was controlled by China, which controls the algorithm. I just wish some of the folks who are squawking today would show 1% the outrage when it was owned by communist China. And I guess my last point, which I made, not you. Oh, you know, you talked about double standard, about being hardcore.
Yeah.
Okay. So you wish that the American immigration system and citizenship process was as hardcore as Israel's is in terms of, is that what you're saying?
Or not military stuff? No.
I think you might be confusing Ukraine because America's given an enormous amount of weaponry to Ukraine. And there's some senators who seem very excited about fighting Russia. And I'm not expressing a viewpoint on that war. I'm just saying like Lindsey Graham and the late John McCain, they were almost elated about a conflict. They see it as a way to trap Russia in a proxy war. And maybe they're right. But the reason I added Israel's $3 billion of aid a year is because for that $3 billion of aid, America has no military base in Israel. There are military bases in Qatar. That's the largest base in the Middle East. $10 billion a year the American taxpayers spend on it. The U.S. taxpayers spend about $50 billion a year patrolling the Persian Gulf sea lanes. Who's that for? That's for the oil-producing Sunni Muslim countries.
Right.
That's not for the Jews. There's American bases around the world. Like, oh, Israel gets the most military aid, really, more than Germany, which is 40 U.S. bases?
I guess it's more like, you know, my complaint is more like somebody like Ben Shapiro, who makes his whole brand being against identity politics. But when it comes to Israel, he's like, it must be a Jewish nation forever. And it's like, okay, that's a hypocrisy there.
There's about 50 countries in the world that have an ethnicity or religion hardwired into their constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are Muslim. Yeah. It won't surprise you to hear. But there are some Christian countries. Greece is one of them. Armenia is one of them. Even the United Kingdom, the Church of England is part of their state. There is no separation between church and state. The king is the head of the Church of England.
Yeah, he's still the Pope, yeah.
And so I think that it is okay and it is normal to have an ethnicity. Now, you want to think about that. Like Suella Braverman, who's this conservative anti-immigration former cabinet minister in the UK, she had a very interesting tweet today. Maybe your friends could find it. She said, I'm not English,
right?
But I'm a proud British Asian. I thought, isn't that interesting? Because, of course, she's not indigenous English.
Right.
From the Angles and the Saxons and the Normans and the... Of course, okay, she's saying something that's obvious. It's not shocking. She's a brown woman. So, of course, she's not indigenous English. But she's something. What is that? Oh, this is... you want to see just a minute?
Yeah,
This is the little Nazi I bumped into. You know what? And I tell you, I promise you, I was bored. We were waiting for this huge protest to start. We had just missed Conor McGregor, who had been there. We just missed him. And we were all milling around waiting for this giant rally to start. I had no clue who this pint-sized guy was. I saw the cops going over there looking menacing. And I was sympathetic. And I walk up. Can you just play a minute?
We'll go to that because we got to go to commercial break. We meant to go to calls.
You know
this
what?
Segment
let me shut up. Let's take the calls. Let's take the calls.
Well, we got to go to break. We got a 30-second break. Then we're going to be back on the other side. Well, we'll do that on the other side of this short commercial break. And remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com. You're not getting conversations like this anywhere else in the world, folks. Thealexjonesstore.com. InfoWars is where we're actually trying to drive to the truth. And we genuinely love everybody and just want to stop the globalists from putting us all in chains. Please, won't you help us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We'll be right back on the other side. More with Ezra Levant, rebelnews.com. Be right back.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I saw this a few weeks ago. We got it done. That young girl that is the return of the British queen that fought the Romans, Boudica. Look at this. The West awakens. Look at this badass shirt, ladies and gentlemen. It's got a red InfoWars over the heart on the left, and then it's got her on the back. I designed this shirt. I think it's amazing. The West Awakens 2025. This is a badass shirt, and it literally funds people totally committed to freedom. Then we've got Virtue Signal, and it's the Cracker Barrel symbol right there that we updated there. So we got that. We've also got another, the West Awakens with the hatchet and the butcher knife, ladies and gentlemen. Get them now at theyellowshowstore.com. But what you really want is the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it massively discounted, 25% off across the store, apparel, all of it. We've got buy one bottle already discounted, the Shilajit or the Atomic Defense of Beam Boost, and get another bottle half off. The point is, we got War Bonds. That's a nice little piece of art you get with my face on it. You get $110 for $100, and it's mailed to you as a promo code on it for the site. But everybody that becomes a VIP, $30 a month, just like being Amazon Prime, you get $40 to spend each month right when you pay that. You cancel any time, get a special deal, special offer, special sales. I need your support. Wars aren't cheap. So what do good salesmen do? They sell good products. You are insane if you don't get our methylene blue. You are crazy if you don't get our Ultimate Life Force Blood Detox. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action now and get these new limited edition shirts like the F Around Find Out.
Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour with Ezra Levant. I don't know why I can't say your name. Ezra Levant. It's the R and the L. I mix them up. Ezra Levant is here in studio with us. Rebelnews.com is where you can go to find all of his incredible work. And it really is incredible. And again, I'm glad we're having this conversation. I really feel like these conversations are necessary because when you go on the internet, it just becomes this divisive thing where half the time being pressured by Nazis, half the time being pressured by Jews. And I'm just like, I'm trying to get to the truth here, and I'm trying to figure out the way forward. But before we go out to calls, because I do want to go out to calls right now, like one thing I see is I think Israel is really going down a bad slope right now. I mean, they got all the EU turning against them, you know, claiming they're going to recognize Palestine, stopping weapons shipments. A lot of the American populace, especially the young people, are turned against Israel now. I mean, I sort of struggle to see how they regain their footing after this, because I think what's gone on in Gaza has been so horrifying to people, and the videos have come out so regularly for so long. I mean, you know, in the early on, I was going, hey, Israel should not be doing this. You know, they're bombing hospitals and churches or, you know, schools. This isn't good. I got called an anti-Semite then, but now we are, you know, nearly 2 years down the road, and it's like, yeah, this is not, it's not going well for Israel right now. I mean, how do you take that criticism?
Now, you mean
of Israel and how they represent the Jewish people on the world stage.
Sure.
Or claim to.
Now, I don't live in Israel.
Right.
I'm not an Israeli.
Of course.
But I do pay a little bit of attention to what they say about this. So maybe I can try and answer, for maybe the different viewpoint from, let's say, Jerusalem or Tel Aviv.
Mm.
Which is, so you said it's not going well at all. So in the last 2 years, there was the massacre of October 7th, which was terrible.
Mm.
And then the psychic stress of having these hostages underground.
Right.
Terrible. And you're right. Europe has become even more anti-Israel. I'm not sure what it means to recognize a country. So far, none of them. I saw Spain was talking about moving its diplomats. And Israel said, okay, if you're having Palestinian diplomats, they have to be in Ramallah. And none of the Spanish diplomats wanted to leave Israel to go move to a really – I've been to Ramallah. It's not a diplomat-friendly place.
Right.
So what does it mean when Canada, my country, recognizes Palestine? So who's the leader? What's the constitution? What are the borders? Like what does it mean other than it's the ultimate virtue signal? I mean, you know.
I think that's what it is. I think it's a signal, yeah.
But from Israel's point of view, you might hear this. Okay, so Iran has lost a lot of their generals, has had a lot of their ICBMs nuked, or not nuked, destroyed, and had their nuclear program set back, if not eliminated. Hezbollah, which was actually probably the most dangerous force of all, 100,000 rockets, completely decapitated in what could only be called a miraculous move of espionage, like the pagers, and then the precise bombing of their leader. Like, that was without a fight.
Right.
And Hezbollah retreating from Lebanon, and Hamas has been decimated. Now, it's still alive. But all these threats against Israel have been smashed. And the big risk being from Iran. So I think, yes, diplomatically, politically, it hasn't gone well if you're measurement is, how's it looking online? It's looking really bad online. And you and I spend an enormous amount of time online. But they're living real life stuff now. And I think militarily, Israel's never been stronger. And what happened yesterday at the White House? Netanyahu agreed that if Hamas really does pack up shop, Israel will remove itself in stages and there will be a new kind of Gaza there. Now, I don't think it's going to happen because I think Hamas is relentless. I think they really are like Nazis with the religious layer on top of it, too. So I think that there's some pie in the sky. Who knows? Maybe Qatar can wrangle them. But if that comes to pass, if the war ends, if an attempt to replicate Dubai is made in Gaza, how has Israel not won in every meaningful way? I mean...
Oh, shoot. Sorry, we're going to break. We'll be right back.
I was hoping you had some of the Alex Jones ones. How is Alex?
He's great. He lost a lot of weight.
I saw he's getting like... Yeah, he's ready for the next
big... My friend Sean Johnson's training him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he gets up every morning. He works out for hours. He's lost... I think he's lost 70 pounds at this point. He looks fantastic, man.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic. He looks like he's 20 years younger. People think, because this is really funny, because, you know, his whole business is conspiracy theories. It's a conspiracy that Alex has been replaced.
Yeah, yeah.
But listen, folks, that's real Alex. I've watched every step of the way, and my friend trains him. So I can tell you for a fact, that is the real Alex Jones. Quit drinking, quit eating bad food. He's eating healthy food now. He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit, no shortcuts. He did it the right way. Looks great.
You find it all at thealexjonesstore.com, and it funds the most hardcore patriot organization worldwide, absolutely devastating the globalists in our peaceful information war.
Holy shit, he was right about every step of the way.
Navigating the maze of mainstream narratives, Harrison Smith finds the hidden paths in the war room.
All right, welcome back, folks. Big thank you to Ezra Levant for staying with us for 2 hours. We're gonna go on 2 hours. He was with Alex for like over an hour, so thank you so much for staying with us. And we're gonna go directly out to your calls and just hear directly from the audience. And we'll go whoever called in first. First, we'll go to Jay in Ohio, who's been holding for a while. Is this Jay our truck driver friend?
Yeah.
How you doing, Jay? You're on the air.
Jewish truck driver.
Our Jewish truck driver friend, yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. And Shana Tova, I know I'm a little late and hope Yom Kippur comes better. I did have a question. I went to a dinner there for Rosh Hashanah, and I'm a bit of a rebel, and I wore a black InfoWars shirt there with the black letters on it and an InfoWar hat. I had a yarmulke underneath, but anyways, I'm a little bit of a rebel. And we were sitting there, and I was asked if I was an infomercial, you know, for somebody, you know, advertising for InfoWars. And I said, no, but I like InfoWars. And there were people there that did. And the rabbi is pretty cool. And anyways, there was a guy there, and I've been meaning to ask the rabbi. There was a man that he had, like, a swastika on a button on his lapel, and he was an older gentleman. And he had, like, different medals and whatnot, and he was an older guy. I thought Alex might have been able to give a little history on that, or Ezra, on the swastika and how it pertained. I mean, this was an Orthodox event, and I felt a little what is this guy doing here with this swastika on his lapel?
Well,
and then the other thing... go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, then the other thing was, you mentioned Tucker and... You know, the guy, the man at the table we were sitting at, he says, I'll bet you like Tucker Carlson. I said, yeah, I do like Tucker Carlson. Oh, he's an anti-Semite. Well, I've seen you on his program, and I've seen a lot of his, you know, I follow Tucker on X, and I've seen a lot of his interviews. I must say, I listen to Alex's program 10 hours a day most days because I'm on the road. But when I went home that night, just for ha-has, I put on the interview of the what he spoke about on Charlie Kirk about eating hummus, and you know, and they killed Jesus. Well, no offense to anybody, but anytime I hear Jesus, I just recognize growing up where I grew up, that's God, you know. But it's just a different name, Hashem, Adonai, you know. Whatever you want to call God, and I only believe, of course, because I'm Jewish in one God, and I don't see that I need to go through.
So how did you feel about Tucker's comments when you saw them?
Well, I watched it, and to be honest with you, you know, everybody ate hummus back then. I mean, the Arabs, the Jews, and you know, and I still eat hummus, and I love it. So, but you know, he was kind of, you know, what I felt. I felt like. You know, I felt I can relate and understand how the man I was sitting with didn't particularly care the way he put the blame on the Jews for killing Jesus. But in my belief, my understanding, there's one God, and I got nothing against Jesus. If you want to believe in Jesus, I say God bless. Good luck.
Well, thank you for the call, Jay. You know, we always appreciate your calls, and of course, Jay is one of you know, our many Jewish audience members that you know, I think about any time we talk about Jews, in the recognition that, hey, there are people listening to me right now that agree with me and don't deserve to be lumped in with the likes of any of the bad people you'd like to name, like Jonathan Greenblatt. What did you think? Because I maybe I'm being naive or missing the dog whistle or whatever, but I sort of understood what Tucker was saying as just purely about what a terrible idea it was to think that killing somebody would stop their ideas, in the sense that you think you're going to kill Jesus and that'll be that. And, you know, by Monday, everybody will have forgotten. And 2,000 years later, we're still counting, you know, the years by from when he was born. So that's how I understood it. But I could also understand how it could be a dog whistle of sorts.
From, as I said to Alex earlier today, for many years, Tucker Carlson was my absolute hero. I count appearing on his show a few times as some career highlights. I really looked up to him in many ways. But, you know, enough facts have presented that my theory about him has to change. And I don't understand why he has changed his compass. A crass accusation would be cash. I find that hard to believe because I think he's wealthy, and I don't think he's, I mean, he has enough that he doesn't need to be greedy. Is it, I don't know what it is. Is it revenge against someone who treated him poorly, whether that's the Murdochs or whether it's, I don't know. I cannot calculate. I cannot make sense why Tucker has now taken, like the other day I saw him talk about Sharia law. I don't know if you saw that clip. And he said, look on the streets of, forget which Arab country he was referring to. And he said, you know, it's safe. You don't have to lock your car. Women aren't raped. Who wouldn't want that? Well, yeah, brother, that's like maybe one aspect of Sharia law, but actually that's because women can't go out without being totally covered and without their male guardian there. Like, there's a lot of real obvious arguments against that, but Tucker knows that. I've seen Tucker rail against that. How can you make a 180-degree shift? And that's why I'm very troubled by it, is because I'm the original Tucker super fan, who now is, I'm shaken in my faith in him. And I don't want to call him an anti-Semite. I hate throwing that around casually, but because I've seen so many things that make me raise an eyebrow, when I saw that comment, I thought, why are you, at the moment they're burying this man in front of his widow, making an implication that the Jews did it? Because there's all these wild accusations that Israel did it. And some of the accusations are completely baseless. Candace Owens saying, I know his final thoughts in the letter. Well, the letter to Benjamin Netanyahu was finally released. And you know what? I mean, Candace is someone else that I sort of looked up to. But she's gone totally cuckoo. Like, she's saying there's not even such a thing as Jews there. Frankists and this, like, I just, like, I feel like the woman is reading Wikipedia for an hour at night and then stretches it another standard deviation and then speaks it with great, like, I don't know what the hell is going on there. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to go come on Alex's show, because I know that in my 1 hour with him and my 2 hours with you, I'm not going to convert any Semites into Jew lovers. I'm not going to change people's mind in a deep way. It would be impossible to do so, and I would be a fool to try. But I am trying to leave two ideas out there, and you've heard me say them a few times. One is, don't make the mistake of the left in imputing a collective guilt or a collective mindset. Jews, as we just had a Jewish Alex Jones supporter, a big-time Alex Jones supporter, going to a Jewish event, decked out head-to-toe in Alex Jones swag. That's a 10 out of 10 Alex Jones supporter. How can you say that man is cut from the same cloth as Alex Soros? Right. On paper, they're both Jews. But now he used the word, I don't know if you heard it, he said Rosh Hashanah. That's the Jewish word for high. So he was saying a few things about it's a Jewish high holiday. I don't think Alex Soros even knows how to say those words.
Right.
So can you really say, take the sins of George and Alex Soros and put them on that friendly trucker? No, you can't. And to do so is to offend one of the key values of our side of the argument, which is to treat people as individuals.
Right.
Listen, I know that Jews on the whole tilt liberal. I'm not dumb. Just like blacks and Hispanics do. But, you know, take people as they come. And I've lived my life as a freedom fighter in a smaller footprint than Alex Jones, but I feel a camaraderie. And so I want anyone who's watching in good faith to use that one device is don't say the Jews, because it wasn't all the Jews. And it may not have even been a Jewish impulse. It could have just been a Jew by coincidence. And the second thing is do not use the Jews did it, Israel did it, as an excuse for everything else. And with great respect, I think you did that a tiny bit today too. And here's what I mean. How come Israel gets all this support from U.S. senators and America, we can't do the same thing? How come Israel's allowed to have maybe an ethnic policy, but America isn't? Okay. What are you talking about? It's your country. That little Nazi I bumped into in Ireland basically said the Jews have brought the downfall of Ireland. There are 2,000 Jews in Ireland of a country of 5 million. It's not even 0.1%. There has not been a Jew in the Irish Parliament in over a decade. If there is a problem in Ireland, which there is, and I love Ireland, and I want Ireland to fix its problems, I want Ireland to stop the deracination of its own people. It breaks my heart, the de-Irishing of that country. And I say this as a foreigner.
Right.
But for him to say, the Jews did it. No, brother. A parliament of Irishmen did it. And he, oh, but the Jews are pulling the strings. Are they really? If so, can you not have a vote in your parliament? Like, at what point, how Jew-free does your country have to be before you can say, you know what, maybe we opened the door.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Jews.
Well, I'll just, you know, to play devil's advocate here, the argument is like, well, we have the ADL training our FBI, and they say that, you know, it's not that, oh, Nazis are bad. They say, you know, signs that say it's okay to be white are bad. So we have this institutional force that is suppressing the ability of, you know, native white Christian people to take their own side. And that is another thing that I don't even, it's not even that I'm like, oh, I want to be like Israel or like they get to have it and we don't, and that's not fair. It's, there's something about it that when it comes to Republicans, they have been trained, you know, like Pavlovian, it's like, you know, they're like dogs. They like cannot support Americans, especially not when it comes to like they, I mean, they stripped Steve King of his, you know, committee meetings because he was like, yeah, white people aren't that bad. What's the big deal? And, you know, the Republicans lead the charge on stripping him of his committee meetings. So it's
are
like,
Jews white or not?
Well, I don't know.
Well, what do you think? Do I look white to you?
Well, you look white. Like you look like if it was a dichotomy between, you know, black and white, I think, or not white and white.
Is it just the Jews who are doing this anti-white thing? Cause I know I don't do the anti-white.
No, and there's a lot of white people that are anti-white.
And is there anyone else?
Of course. But again,
like, what are the political pressures? So the Jews. Yeah. Listen, we've already agreed that the ADL are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
I've shown you the proof of our team in action exposing that.
Yeah.
I think that everyone has to find their courage. I'm a nationalist populist. And by the way, that applies to the Jews too. The Jews have a historical homeland. Look, read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The Jews also won it through a grant from the United Nations. The Jews also won it in a series of wars. That's three ways the Jews own Israel. Now, you can argue about the borders, and that's being done. By the way, to answer your question from half an hour ago, I think if this peace deal sticks, Israel would be in a golden age because this political military terrorist soar will be over. Wouldn't it be something if it was the new Dubai? Iran has been taken down a notch. There's a reason why United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia are warm to Israel, because they were worried about Iran. And they also want to move forward from this hate. You know, I saw an interesting post by Dominic Cummings that senior people in the UAE say, don't send your kids to London to go to school because they'll come back radicalized.
Mm.
They ban the Muslim Brotherhood in the UAE and Saudi.
And like half the people that fought for ISIS were literally from Europe. It was like a training ground.
I went to Iraq. I went to the Nineveh plain. We crowdfunded some money to get some Christians out of there because they were being persecuted by ISIS. And then the next Iranian Islamic terrorist group called Hashd al-Shaabi. So I went over there and I was in this tiny town called, it's such a tiny, it means house of dirt. I'm trying to remember how to say that in Arabic. And I went into a church because these were all Christian towns that ISIS had come in and spray painted with a stencil on the wall, basically get out, convert or die.
Right.
And in the church, ISIS had snapped every cross. Like they made a point of breaking every single cross. They went to the cemetery and broke all the crosses there. Here's what shocked me. The graffiti in this church, do you know what language it was in? was in German.
Right.
Because the terrorists who had gone to this Butz, I forget the name of the town, I can't say it now, were from Europe.
Right.
Their first language was German. And they had come to build this caliphate. And imagine if Germany and France and England are more radical than the UAE, which is very much true. Jews walk around the UAE. I spoke to a rabbi in Dubai. He says he has more hassle on the streets of New York than in Dubai. How's that even possible? That's what he said. So to answer your question, I think there's hope in the Middle East. And I'm extremely online, too. I get it. But there's more than just the echo chamber. There's reality on the ground. And sometimes, by the way, countries put out statements for political consumption. And the Arab states have to tip their hat to Palestine. And, of course, they're upset by the images of innocents being caught in a war. Of course they are. But they also know, and there's a reason that not a single Arab state has taken Palestinian refugees. There's a reason for that, my friend. And I think that there's a chance with this Trump peace deal to actually have a regional peace. He'll never get a Nobel Prize for it.
I hope so. I would just say, you know, it's like when you say, like, well, why don't you, you know, why don't you vote, you know, or get in your parliament? It's your people doing it. Again, I just think there's this institutional push that is driven by organizations like the ADL that I know we don't like, but, you know, they couch their actions on, you know, being representative of Jewish people. So again, I think there's a frustration.
Well, okay,
where,
besides the ADL, who says there's,
well, AIPAC would be another one that
AIPAC is an anti-white organization.
Well,
one thing they've done that's anti-white. I'm not an expert of AIPAC. I'm not a member.
Well, again, it's not that they, well, I'm sure I could find something, but it's not that necessarily that they're anti-white.
I acknowledge that I hate the ADL because they hijack the word Jewish and weaponize it. We agree on that.
Yeah.
AIPAC to me is just one of a gazillion lobby groups and PACs trying to move legislation in America. I've never heard of them being accused of being anti-white before.
Well, again, you've got, you know, Thomas Massey saying that everybody's got an AIPAC handler, and we see the way that sort of what is, like, when Benjamin Netanyahu walks into Congress, he gets a standing ovation from both sides of the aisle, right?
You know,
it feels like, okay, how can we not, no American president will ever get loyalty from both sides of the aisle, but the Israeli president commands loyalty from both sides of the aisle. So, again, it's not even
necessary. Has Zelensky ever spoken?
Yeah, he probably would too.
Okay, so, again, I'm trying, cause you're being categorical. No one else. Really? I can think of a few.
Well, no, I'm saying no American president.
Okay. You know what?
See what I'm saying?
I want to tell you something I did when I was a teenager. I actually attended one AIPAC meeting. I think I was 17. And so I think I know exactly what Thomas Massey's talking about. Can I tell you a little bit about my one visit to an AIPAC conference?
Sure.
So I was a teenager, and I came to Washington. I was very excited. I was a Canadian, so I don't know what I was doing. But I was assigned, because I was from Calgary, I was assigned to the group from, I think it was Oregon. So basically, you had a couple thousand Jews coming to Washington to learn about Israel issues. And then they had a lobby day where everyone was directed to the congressman or senator in their region. So if you have 2,000 Jews from across America, okay, you 10 go to this congressman, you go to that one. And one of those people would be, they wouldn't use the word handler. That word is chosen because it sounds like you're a paid minder. There was someone who would sort of volunteer and be, yeah, I'll be the contact. Mm-hmm. I'll be the one who reminds our congressman that in his district, there's 1,000 Jews. Or to remind him that in his district, or people care this way. That's what Massey means by a handler.
Well,
so
it's
not
that,
it's not a Mossad.
No, I know. It's
foreigner.
Right. It's an American citizen. Yeah.
And my memory, it's now 38 years ago when I went as a teenager, and I remember I was with the Oregon delegation for some reason. It was like a mom or a dad who they were really excited and a little nervous. And they sort of agreed that once in a while they would send an email. And that's what a handler is. The way Massey talks about it, it's like some Mossad spy.
But it's also the way AIPAC talks. You know, AIPAC will put up a thing going,
of course
you know, 99% of our candidates got elected.
And why would they say that? Now, they could say that because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could say that because they're in the fundraising business. And if they look weak or powerless, who's going to give to them?
But it is real, right? I mean, they
would Ted
they,
Cruz they be should. Reelected without AIPAC money?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
You think that Ted Cruz is so on the edge that if it weren't for AIPAC, he wouldn't win?
I think he barely squeaked by last time.
I put it to you that AIPAC, like every other fundraising organization, is a specialist at asking for money and sounding like a pufferfish, bigger than the. And I'm not denying that AIPAC is powerful, but I would also put to you that every other country in the world does this too, including in recent years, Qatar.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure other they also have to register for FARA, which AIPAC doesn't register.
AIPAC
for.
Are American,
right? Well,
I was with a bunch of mums and dads.
Yeah, who were, no, I get that, but again, it's the fact that like, okay, we have fought like hell, we got Trump elected, and then it feels like so much of the effort and the energy and the resources of Trump's second administration have gone towards Israel-centric. Topics. I mean, it has. I mean, you know, yes, they're deporting people, but then you've got this hyper focus on we're gonna go through people's social media, and if they're anti-Israel, they aren't gonna get into the country. Hey, it's like that's not for us.
Let's pause for a second.
Yeah.
Now, have you actually changed the test, the litmus test there? Anti-Israel, is that really the test, or is it pro-Hamas? Because they're different things.
Are they?
Oh my God, they are. If you said, I oppose Netanyahu, I oppose Israel, by the way, some Jews would do that. But if you are pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist, you can be an American of any background and say, you've come to our country and you're supporting proscribed terrorist groups, get out. Is that a favorite of the Jews? Well, I guess because Hamas hates the Jews the most. But that's it's very different to kick out a supporter of a terrorist group than, I mean...
Well, the example.
It's not anti-Semitism. It's support for terrorists.
The examples I've seen.
I want to see the wording.
Explicit, you can bend that. You can go, well, you know, they're supporting Hamas because they're protesting for Palestinians and the Palestinians.
How about if there were a bunch of foreign students, international students, who were full-blown anti-black racists? And they would burn a cross maybe and wear white hoods maybe instead of a keffiyeh, wear a white hood instead of, chanting from the river to the sea, they were chanting some anti-black thing. If foreign nationals came to America, went to universities, and hounded blacks in the manner that these foreign nationals are coming to universities and hounding Jews, do you think that those foreign nationals would have their visas stripped by Trump and kicked out? I know they would.
Well, but I'd say switch it to white, and the answer is no.
Well, see, that's where I'd like to differentiate, because I agree with you that anti-white bigotry is illegal, should be illegal. And by the way, look at Trump and his appointment. Harmeet Dillon, the head of civil rights, very strong on these issues. And taking the bad guys to court on these. Don't elide the battle over whiteness, which you've tried to hang around the Jews. And I admit some Jews are anti-white. But I think saying AIPAC is an anti-white organization, I think that's a bridge too far.
Well, I would say that
I know the ADL is, but they're awful. Yeah. They're Obama types.
Yeah. Well, I would just say that what AIPAC does is draws a bunch of, again, the resources, energy, effort of our government away from things that actually would benefit or, affect
us. Okay, what resources? Other than the $3 billion a year in foreign aid to Israel, which is dwarfed by the military. Like, I just can't get over the fact that America still has 40 bases in Germany and 50,000 troops there. Do you think that's less than $3 billion that they give Israel every year? There's still American bases. You know why there's an American base in Cuba? Because America wouldn't let go of that for more than 100 years ago.
Right.
The thing about Americans, God bless them, they protect my country, the greatest freedom force in all of history. America never leaves. Trump wants Bagram Air Base again.
We're going back to Afghanistan.
My point is, you really think the $3 billion a year they're giving to Israel more than they give to?
It's not necessarily about the foreign aid that we'll go after calls. We keep getting distracted. Okay. We got to go to calls.
All right.
We're going to calls on the next time. I promise.
Right.
Stay on the line. We'll be right there.
So you were just telling me that you had a brain disease.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I was in a wheelchair. That methylene blue, I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it. And I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It is a miracle. It's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to take, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day
right. And
pay what? I don't know, $30, $40 a bottle of it?
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
I'm not paid to say this, not one dime. This is the best product you guys have ever had. You guys got to order it at the AlexJonesStore.com.
Our methylene blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost, feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in, and it, instantly, I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt, instantly, I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to, 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. This stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene blue works for me.
I feel it in my head and neck, too. My brain's going really fast. I really like it.
Unlimited fabulous power!
Volunteer power!
You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus.
I do feel like it's eliminated the brain fog a lot.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had. Please go to the Alex Jones.
Powered by Methylene Blue, Ultra Methylene Blue at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, we actually are going to be joined by another guest, David Pine, in the next hour. So we're not going to do all 3 hours with Ezra Levant. He is here for this final segment, and we thank him so much for giving us so much of his time and taking on these questions and these issues that so often just get bowled over and people get called names and these things never get discussed. I think we need to discuss it for all of our sake. So thank you, Ezra, for being here. And let's go off to the calls. Terry in Minnesota is next in line. Thank you so much for calling. Thank you for holding. I'm sorry. We're both just rambling on. Terry, you're on the air.
Hey, you guys are doing good at rambling. Hey, what do you know, huh?
Ezra,
I got a question for you. I got a question for you, Ezra, and Harrison, too, but Ezra for sure. Would you say pretty much that this world is basically in confusion in Babylon because there's so much out there that people are basically heads are spinning?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, especially when I hear the news out of the UK, I mean, it is so, yes, the world is in absolute confusion would be my take. I think Ezra would probably agree.
Yeah, and I think that there was a quantum moment during COVID because so many institutions that we looked up to and trusted broke.
Yep.
And I think it was a shock to many people. Like, even the way I deal with my own doctor, I'm a skeptic because he tried to sell me on a jab.
Right.
And the lines he used were not medical. They were like political.
Right.
Where do you get your information from? Facebook. You know, they make billions. Like, I just thought, you're treating me like I'm stupid. I actually feel like I know more than you. You're not giving me medical advice. You're giving me political advice. That has changed forever my view, not just of doctors, but of the whole medical system.
Yeah.
And now multiply that to the media, to professors, to the colleges of physicians and surgeons, or whatever they're called down here. Every single check and balance in our democracy failed, yours less so than in Canada. In Canada, they brought in martial law when the truckers had a protest.
And they stole the bank accounts. It was brutal.
Yeah, and so, listen, man is confused. We live in a confused state. We're trying to seek out truth. But then when everything we actually thought, okay, I know these 10 things. I'm safe with these 10 things. Let's go discover the – no, these are detonating now.
Yeah.
So that is so alienating. And the problem is we need to trust some things. It's too exhausting to go through life doubting everything. I told Alex that my favorite thing about him was he was an omni-skeptic.
Yeah.
And that he challenges everything and he's not afraid to do so. And he's so important for that role. He's like the leader of the opposition in a way. He opposes and once in a while he gets it wrong. So what? Someone had to oppose just to test it. In our system, we believe in the clash of ideas, a scientific hypothesis. It fails, come up with a new one. But my worry is in this world where we don't trust anything, do not fill the gap with the universal excuse. Blame the Jews. Blame the Jews. The Jews did it. The Jews did it. Don't do that. I'm not here to turn Jew haters into Jew lovers. I'm here to tell people of good faith, be a little bit skeptical when people just blame the Jews. Was it really a Jew? And if he was Jewish, was it in his essence as a Jew, or was it just ancillary that he was Jewish? And do not fall prey to the leftist mindset of blaming others for your own life, because it's so easy to do. Do not. For 2,000 years, Jews have been blamed. Don't blame them for something they didn't do.
Absolutely, 100%. What was your question, Jerry? I think, everybody is mixed up right now. And I think you're right. I mean, my take is actually different. I think embrace the uncertainty. Just go, you know what? Maybe I don't know what the truth is, but I'm going to, you know, pursue what I do know. I was talking when all the AI stuff first started coming out and people were making these pictures that were so incredible but totally fake. My mom said, I'm not going to be able to trust any pictures I see anymore. And I go, have you been trusting that? You shouldn't have been. For the last 20 years, you should have been looking at everything askance and going, this could be true or could not. I'm going to proceed as if both are possible. So, Terry, what question were you getting to? I don't think you finished your thought there.
Okay. Here it is. Buckle up. The Jews of the tribe of Judah have been taking the rap for centuries as to what the Kenites, K-E-N-I-T-E-T-A-R-E-S, Kenite tares, have wrought on this world. Everybody blames the Jews. We are talking about two separate peoples, and I'm imploring both of you. And I know there's a standard King James, lying around the office somewhere. And before Ezra leaves, you track this down. It's the Key of David. It's real quick. Listen up. Here it comes. John 8:42-47. Revelation 2:9-39. Matthew 24:30. Then jump to Matthew 13:24-30. Then jump to 34:43. Genesis 3:13-19. Ezekiel 28:13, 1 Chronicles 2:55, 1 John 3:10-12. That nails down from God, not me, none of us, of what the hell we're talking about here, because the Jews are absolutely getting decimated by these people. God warned of the Kenites since the garden, okay? And Kenite just means it's basically was a Hebrew, the offspring of Cain. And we all know Cain was the first murderer. You know what I'm saying?
Did he have offspring? So that very, very interesting question. Thank you for that, Terry. Do you want to respond to that? Or should we go next?
You know what? I can't say I know what a canine is, and I've jotted the word down. I didn't jot down all those other paragraphs, but I think that everyone should read, and they should read the King James Version. It's harder to read, but the way it was written was very important too. It was political decisions. There was 24 people who,
right.
I mean, imagine writing such an important book by committee. It's almost impossible. Because that was the standard version. And that is one of the literary It's even if you're, you don't, even if you're not Jewish or Christian, it's a, it is the key to understanding Western civilization.
It's a masterpiece. And I was shocked because, you know, you grow up going to church and hearing all the stories. So you know them just, you know, almost second nature. But then, you know, probably 10 years ago, I went back and actually read the New Testament for the first time. And it's like, it's so much more human and yet so much more godly than you remember. It's just the stories are so different than you hear in preschool, you know, but that's what gets stuck in your head. So I totally agree. Everybody should absolutely read that.
And that version, like the King, I mean, it, maybe it's a little hard. There's the New King James, which sort of updates the language, but
you want the old.
It's the history of the West. The history of Christianity is the history of the West.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that 100%. Thanks so much for the call, Terry. Really appreciate that. Let's go to Dan in California next, again on Scripture. Dan, on line four, thank you for calling in. You're on the air with myself and Ezra Levant.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. I wanted to bring it up. The previous caller made a good comment. So Jesus was from the tribe of Judah, all right? And so when we call out the Jews, we shouldn't be calling out the Jews. I mean, John 8:44 says Jesus confronts the religious leaders and says, "You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning." Okay, and so we have to recognize that when we start labeling, you know, calling out, saying it's the Jews, it's not the Jews. Who does Satan want us to? Who does he want to persecute? Well, of course, the Jews, because he's everything out of Satan's mouth is a lie, right? But we also got to remember, in Judges, the failure to drive the Canaanites out, God says Israel failed to expel the Canaanites and its inhabitants, and this disobedience led to spiritual and moral compromise. So we have to take that into account, and so there is, you know, in Matthew 21, it says, "Therefore I say unto you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a nation bearing the fruits of it." So is that the United States? Is that who we are now? I mean, because it says that those will be grafted in that are not of the 12 tribes. We are grafted in as Christians, okay? And so their fulfillment from God for their land has already been fulfilled. And we can call, you know, Israel, God can defend Israel anytime he wants. And it says the final battle, that what happens is that Israel be surrounded and the armies do not come to defend it. And God returns at that point.
Right. So I think that's what a lot of, especially the evangelicals sort of look forward to. And you know, is behind a lot of their support of Israel. Comments on that? Because, you know, if you read the Old Testament, it's sort of a constant, you know, there are Jews that are falling out of favor with God and they start worshiping cows and get punished. And then there are good people that, you know, get the blessing of the Lord. So, you know, there's a constant sort of back and forth throughout the Old Testament.
Have you ever been to Israel?
No.
Would you ever go? I'm not inviting you. I'm just saying, would you ever go?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I think it's an eye opener for people who think about Israel and talk about Israel as you do. And I think the first thing is it's surprising. It's very modern, mm-hmm. very multiracial, very multicultural, which I think would surprise people. And you'd be surprised at how many Arabs interact completely peacefully with Jews. Like, I think you would be shocked because the only news you get about the region is bad news. But in Jerusalem, for example, you see Jews, very Orthodox, Muslim women, very Orthodox, and they interact in general peacefully. I think you would be startled by that. You would be fascinated by their technology, their military, their fence technology. You know, they have a barrier between Arab villages and Jewish villages for security, something that I think America could profit from learning about. But I think for a Christian person, going to the places in the Bible cannot but be moving, confirming in your faith, and just even for people who are not religious. But just, you know, the stories, it's fascinating. You know, Armageddon, Hebrew Har Megiddo. There's a place called Megiddo where how many levels of civilization ruined upon one and the next. I would encourage any Israel skeptic to go to Israel. And I would say, try and meet with both sides. And I think it would, I mean, like, if you talked about Italy as much as you talk about Israel and the Jews, wouldn't you think, well, maybe I'm just going to go and check it out? No, I'm not saying you don't know a lot about it. In fact, the opposite. I'm saying because you do know so much about it. Well, what happened if you went there? And I'm not saying to go in a managed way, but I just think that being there, and especially when we're hearing about, you know, two calls in a row have referred to old texts and what happened thousands of years ago. What would happen if you actually saw evidence of that? And how would you feel about protecting that? And how would you feel about the Christian community in a place like Bethlehem being eradicated? And I don't know. I would recommend anyone go there. You know, Rebel News about 8 years ago, we took our staff and we had some skeptics on our staff. And I said, we're going to Israel. We're going to crowdfund it. You have only one rule. You can say anything you want, but you have to be honest. And I thought that was a great rule. We took Gavin McInnes. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about.
Of course, yeah.
And he prepared by reading an anti-Semitic book called The Culture of Critique. And I said, I don't care. Your only rule is that you have to listen to, but we met with both sides. We met with Jews. We met with Arabs. We went into Ramallah. I said, if you're impressed, you have to say so. Right. If you're persuaded, you have to say so. That was my one request. And to this day, he talks about that,
yeah,
by the way. And I would say, take the biggest skeptic, go as long as you're going with your eyes open. I don't know. I think it's worth going. Like, wouldn't you say it's worth going if you talk, given how much you talk about it?
It could be. I mean, I don't really have a negative view of Israel, of the Israeli people or anything.
I'm not saying you do.
Well, I mean, I expect them to be, very multicultural. I mean, I almost expect it to be more like America than most other places. Is that accurate or?
Not really, because it's a different mix. But I mean, just how small it is, how close, right, like how narrow Israel is, where the West Bank, like it's what, 11 miles or something at its narrowest point.
Yeah, it's tiny.
Like that's another thing for America, which is a big, mighty country with hundreds of millions of people. Or just imagine the death toll of 1,200 people killed in a terrorist attack. Well, I mean, what was the biggest attack on America? There was the World Trade Center and there was Pearl Harbor. Each was about 3,000 dead. Okay, well, Israel has about 10 million people. They had 1,200 dead. So multiply that by 30. That would be like 30,000 killed in one day. Like the shock. And also, you know what? There's one thing about Israel. And you talked about why does Israel get certain treatment and America doesn't. On that, I very much agree with you on one particular thing. Israelis have skin in the game. It's not just internet chit-chat. They have to go and join there. There's conscription there. And they most likely will serve and be in danger. And so you've got to make a decision about your life.
Right.
Is it meaningful? And, you know, Israel, incredibly, is one of the few Western countries that has a positive birth rate. You know, from Italy to Canada to the Scandinavian countries, no one's having babies anymore. How is it that in a country that's in such existential jeopardy, such military threat, they're having more babies? There's something there that I wish Americans would learn. You keep talking about white Americans. Okay, why is the white American birth rate so low? Now, there's some reasons. Housing costs, people being demoralized in certain ways, unemployment, you can't get a job to pay the bills, you can't move out. There's a lot of reasons. I know them. But maybe there's something to learn. How is it that a beleaguered little country has just decided it's going to live? It's just decided that. Decided it doesn't give a damn what the UN says. Decided it doesn't give a damn what alt-right Twitter says. Decided it's just going to live. There's something that I wish Americans would learn from that. And I think you do, too, because you've said it about four times today.
Yeah.
Why can't we have some of those things? Well, I agree with you. But part of it is...
It's different in the political where it's like we do advocate for these things and then we just get ignored, which is frustrating. And then the personal, because I was saying to you during the break, like one of the things that I've noticed in my life, all of my Jewish friends all got married young. They're all super close with their extended families. They all had tons of kids. And it's like, I don't see my white friends following that same. So there's a lot of stuff about the Jewish community that I'm like, why can we not do this? Why can we not? And, you know, part of it is sort of the, in Israel specifically, like the siege mentality. There, when you're under pressure like that, it's good for you. What's going wrong with America is we're too comfortable and we think everything's going to fine no matter what. And we can just, you know, I'll put off getting married till I'm 45 and then I'll have kids. And it's like, it doesn't work that way. You gotta have your head in the game. And I think Jews do a very good job of pressuring other Jews of like, hey, you know, you gotta, it's the cliche. they're, you know, dentists and lawyers and all that, because it's like, hey, you got to contribute. You got to be somebody, you know, for yourself, but for all of us. I think there's this collective, really good mentality of like, we're all in this together. You know, we have to survive, and we can't, you know, we can't just be lackadaisical because, you know, we're this sort of a siege mentality. Would you agree with that?
There's a lot to talk about there, and I agree with a lot of it. But instead of taking 5 minutes to give you my thoughts,
we should go to the calls. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call, Dan. I'm sorry. It's a really fun conversation.
No, I got something I was going to say, but let's take more calls.
Okay, Mark from San Jose. Thank you for calling in. Stu Peters debate with Alex. And again, I'm just picking whoever was here first, so the topics are random. Mark, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have the utmost respect for both you guys. I love that interview with Borla. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. I would encourage people to get the shirts, you know, the Rebel News, InfoWars, go to the city councils and supervisors and, you know, Canada and here and, you know, give them a comment, okay? Now, in regards to Stu Peters, I also respect him. He calls himself the walking lie detector test, and I think there's been some miscommunication. I don't think he's lied, and I don't think Alex has lied. There's been some real miscommunication. So if you would publicly say, Stu, you can call in. But, you know, it's limited. Maybe you could make 2 minutes apiece, 5 minutes apiece, whatever you wish. And then, you know, you could answer his statements, or you could ignore them and vice versa. But I would love to see Stu Peters on the Ezra Levant show and Rebel News and on InfoWars and, you know, different platforms. Because I, you know, there's a lot of us listening that do respect all four of you guys, even though, you know, there's some disagreements.
Well, I'll say when it comes to Stu Peters, like every time he says stuff online, that's because he'll say, oh, the InfoWars hosts told me I couldn't go on. And I just say to him, you're lying. That's a lie. Just stop saying that. Stop lying about this. You're lying. I got no beef with Stu Peters other than just, that's a lie, so he shouldn't say it. I mean, I've been on Stu Peters' show, but yeah, he's, you know, like I was saying, he's the one that, I mean, he's got a warped view, and so I disagree with him, and I go on a show and tell him that. Would you ever have Stu Peters on, Ezra?
I got to know him a tiny bit before this whole Israel thing became his bread and butter, and it was actually about a trucker case. About a COVID-type case, and I'm not looking to pick a fight here, but my experience is the same one you just described. Look, there's some people who with whom a debate, I don't know if it's going to be successful. And the reason I said, hey, Alex, I got a few things on my mind. You might have come down and just vent, is because I know that InfoWars viewers are thoughtful. They know why they believe things. They're open to new information. And they're also alive to the fact that there's a battle on for your mind, as the saying goes.
100%.
And so I feel like it's a good faith audience. And even if they don't agree with me, they're going to give me a hearing. And if I say, look in your own heart, please don't do the leftist move of collective judgment of Jews. Please don't use anti-Semitism as an excuseology. I feel like I've got a chance of those getting through. Not every audience is that way. I don't know. I personally don't think it would profit me to interact with them.
He's commenting on us. He's probably watching right now. How you doing, Stu? Welcome to the show. Thank you for the call, Mark. Let's go to Dr. Mike in Houston. Dr. Mike in my hometown. Thanks for calling in, Dr. Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Harrison Mr. Levant. I was wondering, you have a co-national, I guess, for lack of a better word, an author that's Henry Makow. I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but he's a Polish of Polish extraction. He's a Jew, just an ethnic Jew. He's written four books, the most recent of which is Illuminati 4, which was I read the first three books. They were great, but this one was just startling. It came out in January. He makes the claim that Chabad is moving, this extremist ultra-Orthodox clique of Jews out of the synagogue in New York City, and they have similar organizations across the nation and across the world. But this organization is pushing the world towards a nuclear Armageddon in the hopes of exterminating all Gentiles, or as many as possible, to bring about what they consider the the real Messiah, Mashiach. You know, this is their intent, and he claims that they have an important or a critical window between Rosh Hashanah 2027 and Rosh Hashanah 2028, in which this all must be accomplished. And I looked at these weird reversals of Trump, whom he claims again is a member of Chabad, kind of a quiet.
Interesting. So you're seeing things move towards that eventuality. I'm sorry, we're running out of time here, and this is our last segment with Ezra, so I wanted to get his comment on that. Chabad Lubavitch, what's your...
Sure. I know Chabad. Mm-hmm. I've known them my whole life. They're basically evangelical Jews, but not towards Gentiles, towards getting existing Jews to maybe raise their observance level. That's the thing about Jews. They don't try and convert people to Judaism, but rabbis like Chabad try and say, come on, light those Sabbath candles. Come on, keep a little kosher. Like, they're sort of nagging you in a very friendly way to boost your Judaism. They're big into charity. They're sort of like the Mormon missionaries. They go far away. Like, there's Chabad in Dubai. There's Chabad in Beijing. Like, in the strangest places you'll find these folks. I have been dealing with Chabad. I saw a Chabad rabbi a week ago in Calgary, Alberta. I have been dealing with these people for 35 years. I have never once heard anything political or in the manner you just described. Now, I don't know what every Chabad rabbi in the world says. Listen, they love coming together and, you know, giving an award. And of course, and I mean, everybody loves to have their picture taken with the president. How you describe Chabad, and I know you're not saying it, you're repeating how Henry Mankow describes it. I'm going to guess he's never met a Chabad rabbi or gone to Chabad house. They call it Chabad house. It's basically, if I were to go to Hong Kong today, I could go there and get a hot meal, and the rabbi would pressure me to say a prayer or something.
Right.
They are not what was just described. They're just not. And maybe Henry Mankow knows other things, but I'm going to guess that he's never actually met a Chabad rabbi or gone to a Chabad house, because what he's described, it's just not how it is.
Right.
And on the other, when I was doing Alex's show, someone quoted Stu Peters and said, goy means cattle. Mm. No, like, there's 100 little things like that that try catching these rumors and swatting them down. And I'm not saying Jews are perfect and everything's a happy answer, but this little story about Chabad and the little story about what goy means, those are just,
it's got to be
just,
fresh.
It's just, not,
it's got to be
there's
fresh.
There's enough real, you know what I say?
Yeah.
I say this to my staff, and I know we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
I say this to my staff about conspiracy theories. The world is crazy enough. You don't need
to make
stuff up. You don't need to make stuff up.
That's why we don't. We always just tell the truth, and then people think we're crazy because the world is so crazy. Ezra Levant, thank you so much for joining us. This has been great. RebelNews.com. Go there. Support them. Our brothers in Canada fighting the good fight.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new flash sale, just like we did with Ultra Methylene Blue. Buy one, get one free. Ultimate Creatine Powder. This is private labeled from one of the top certified companies in the U.S. that has their patented micro creatine for higher level absorption. You want to be healthy, have clarity, lose weight, have way better stamina, better workouts. Even if you're not into working out, you're going to love creatine, ladies and gentlemen. And I know I'm not selling something that I didn't know here. But why aren't you taking creatine? Every time I forget to take it over the years, I'm like, why am I taking creatine? And we've got the best. You get your free bottle of Ultimate Creatine Powder now. That's right. Buy one bottle of Ultimate Creatine and get another one free for a limited time only. Strengthen your body and sharpen your mind with Ultimate Creatine Powder, our microized creatine monohydrate powerhouse. Enhance strength and muscle growth. Improve mental stamina, increase workout intensity, accelerated recovery. And if it's good for working out, it's good for everything. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And don't miss out, because Ultimate Creatine is selling out fast. This buy one, get one free offer could end any moment. Yeah. Just like we did the buy one bottle of Ultra Methylene Blue Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. They don't have a lot of this, but they can get it more quickly. But it's close to selling out. But every couple of days this week, we're going to have buy one, get one free of some of the best-selling products. Get Ultimate Creatine. But I'm telling you, the big sleeper, People bought a lot of it. Now the reviews are coming in. Now people are buying a lot of it. And that's our bovine colostrum, one of the strongest brands out there. And it's 2,000 milligram per serving. It just does miraculous things. Get yours now at theyellowshieldstore.com and keep us on the air.
Now, back to our program.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. The third hour is on. We'll be joined shortly by David Pine. He is an expert on nuclear weapons. We're going to talk to him about what the latest developments are with Russia and Ukraine. And of course, actually, there's a lot of information now about a large number of tankers flying across the Atlantic over Europe and down into the Middle East. We're wondering if this isn't the next round of the Iran conflict that we're looking at. Of course, this comes after the agreement yesterday, supposed agreement between Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. We have a statement here, joint statement by the foreign ministers of Qatar, Jordan, UAE, Indonesia, Pakistan, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. They all welcome the U.S. president's sincere efforts to end the war in Gaza. So this agreement put out by Trump yesterday has a lot of support of the actors in the region. It's just up to Hamas now to accept it or not, and we'll figure out where we go from there. You know, I only really meant to spend an hour with Ezra, but I was really enjoying our conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as well, but I feel bad for the crew since I made them put together, like, how many videos do I have today? 57 videos, and I haven't even played them. Because we're having such a good conversation. So I'll try to make up for that here in the third hour as we get to David Pine and what the latest is with, you know, World War III and all of that. But if I got time for one video, I think we should go to clip number 43 here. This was Donald Trump at the meeting with all the generals today in Quantico. And a lot of people wondering what this was like really about. Hegseth is talking about fitness, but it sounds like this part of Trump's speech was really the meat and potatoes of why this emergency meeting was gathered. Let's go now to clip 43.
Together with many of you in the room, we've brought back the fundamental principle that defending the homeland is the military's first and most important priority. That's what it is. Only in recent decades did politicians somehow come to believe that our job is to police the far reaches of Kenya and Somalia, while America is under invasion from within. We're under invasion from within. No different than a foreign enemy, but more difficult in many ways because they don't wear uniforms. At least when they're wearing a uniform, you can take them out. These people don't have uniforms.
So, sounds like they are being prepared for deployment on U.S. streets to go after the migrants. And, of course, that is already being met with violent riotous conditions in Broadview, Illinois, and L.A. and Portland, Oregon. That battle continues. In fact, last night, it genuinely looked like a war zone. Clip number 9 here. This was last night in Portland. You've got the – and we can play this as B-roll. Keep the audio down because we don't have to hear a bunch of Antifa screeching like banshees if we don't have to. But, yeah, it looks like a literal war zone, just fog everywhere. You know, guys in full military uniform being attacked by Antifa. And at the same time, you have, you know, the governor of Oregon going, you know, here's a picture of a park. How could this be a war zone? Well, you're not in the war zone part of the city. The war zone part of the city is around the federal building where Antifa has been staging an insurrection for the better part of the last decade, actually, if you really think about it. Which I like those visuals a lot better than clip 26. Let's go to clip 26. Can you imagine being one of these people? Let's roll 26 here. So this is ICE in full military uniform with the riot shields having to back off some weirdo trans twinks menacing them. And it's just, you know, you just think about how wrong this whole world is, how unnatural this whole world is. What is going on here? Why are they backing up? Why are our guys in full military dress seemingly being, you know, cowed down and forced back by a bunch of literal disabled psychopaths? It's unnatural is what it is. It ain't right, and it needs to be fixed. It needs to be the other way around. We'll be back on the other side with David Pine, an expert on nuclear warfare. What he says is coming next. Don't go anywhere, folks. The War Room, InfoWars.com.
Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at theologyshowstore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try ultramethylene blue, exclusively available at theologyshowstore.com.
Harrison Smith, very happy to welcome one of our regular guests, David Pine. He is the director at the National EMP Task Force. He currently serves as the president of that task force on, as the president of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Mr. Pine previously worked as National Security Policy Director for United States Senator Mike Lee. He also served as a United States Army officer and worked as an international programs manager on the Department of the Army headquarters staff responsible for the countries of the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and the Americas, and Africa from 2000 to 2003. He's an expert on geopolitics and has really unparalleled insight into the complexities that contribute to the balance of power in international relations. You can find his website at emptaskforce.us, and his Substack is dpine.substack.com. That's dpyne.substack.com. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, Harrison, great to be with you.
Well, I'm very glad to have you here because hopefully you can lend some clarity to what the heck is going on in Eastern Europe. And I have this big stack of your articles. The top one, one of the latest from about midway through September. Trump continues to escalate his war with Russia, threatening to provoke World War III. What is going on here, Mr. Pine? Because I was guaranteed, I was assured by Trump that, you know, he would end the Ukraine war in a matter of a week. Here we are 9 months later, and it seems to only be getting more intense. What do you think is the strategy at play here?
Well, that's just the thing. There is no strategy. The strategy, the initial plan for President Trump was to get Russia to agree to the Kellogg Plan. The Kellogg Plan was a 22-point plan, ultimately, that was presented to the Russians somewhere between April 22nd and May 8th of this year. Ultimately he wanted to end the war, but he wanted to do it on U.S. terms. And, once Putin rejected the Kellogg Plan on May 8th, he was done with negotiations for a few months. And then, of course, we had, the Putin-Trump summit, and that actually went quite well, according to what I've read. They were very close to signing a tentative peace framework agreement. Trump was pushing Zelensky to give up the remainder of the Donbass region, which only constitutes 1% of Ukraine's territory in terms of the part of the Donbass that they control. And unfortunately, Zelensky and the EU leaders rejected that. And as a result, Trump went back to neocon war mode, and he's been threatening Russia nonstop. Because he's really clueless. Because he's not willing to do what's necessary to end the war, which is, all it requires him to do is tell Zelensky that, the days of, U.S. security assistance are over and that he'll lose his Starlink access unless he signs on the dotted line of a Trump-Putin negotiated peace agreement. there's no end to the war. Essentially, the war will continue. And it'd be one thing if Trump were had decided just to send defensive weapons to Ukraine and had no U.S. troops or military advisors or weapons technicians or intelligence officials in Ukraine. That would be one thing. But instead, we're providing Ukraine with 3,550 ERAM air-launched cruise missiles, which will be fired by former U.S. Air Force F-16 pilots. And that's very provocative. Those weapons can hit Moscow Oblast. Now Trump's, he's saying he's seriously considering sending Tomahawk, land attack missiles, to Ukraine. That's likely an empty threat, but the very fact that we're doing that, those weapons can range all of, European Russia, all the way to the Urals Mountains where, Putin's, nuclear command centers, underground command centers are located. So the point is, he keeps referring to the war in Ukraine as Biden's war, and that he calls it senseless, ridiculous, could start World War III at any time. And yet he's doing nothing to pressure Zelensky to make even the slightest concession on the road to peace with Russia. Whereas Russia has provided sweeping concessions. They've given up 2/3 of their territorial demands. Used to be they wanted all of Zaporozhye and Kherson Oblast. They've given that up. They now just want the remainder of Donetsk, essentially, which is they control 88% of the Donbas region. And they've also given up their demand for denazification of Ukraine. They're saying Zelensky can stay in power if he wins a democratic election, which all the polls show he would lose if that election was free and fair. And also they've given up their demands that Ukraine disarm to a low level with a very small military. They basically saying Ukraine could keep a large military with every weapon systems but long range drones, missiles, and aircraft. So those demands are much more reasonable. And this is the best deal that Ukraine's going to get. And Trump could take credit for those concessions and say, hey, Putin had unreasonable demands. I got him down to this. This is the best you're going to get. And the war could be over in a week. And all he has to do is tell Zelensky no more Starlink access and no more, intelligence or weapons or ammo. We're pulling out all of our military advisors, weapons technicians and intelligence officials. And you'll be on your own unless you sign on the dotted line. And Zelensky would be forced to do so.
Yeah. And, part of me at first was like, well, maybe this is their Trump proofing of the Ukraine war coming to fruition. Cause I'm sure you remember, I think we talked about it, that, NATO had all of these plans where they were going, okay, if Trump gets into office, he's going to cut off Ukraine. So we're going to sign 5-year contracts with Ukraine so we can outlast the next Trump presidency should it come about. And so I was wondering if maybe that was part of it, that Trump, noticed that, okay, I don't have any ability to stop weapons transfers because they signed these, binding contracts for 5 years. So I'm just going to embrace it and pretend it's my thing. But that doesn't explain the expansion that he seems to be championing. As you note in your Substack article, President Trump claims Ukraine can retake all of its territory with Western support. So obviously the Trump proofing is not adequate to explain why he's now saying that they're going to take more stuff back. Now we're going to go into Russia. I mean, it seems utterly insane to me because, correct me if I'm wrong, NATO has no ability to fight this war in any real way. In fact, I don't want to waste our time with it, but I do have a video with former NATO chair Bauer warning that Europe basically gets all of its energy and all of its production from China. And if Europe and NATO were to go to war with Russia and then China's involved, like, they have no production. They have no industry. How are they even going to fight this war? This is what's so confusing to me. What do they even think is going to happen moving forward? They can't fight a war. Why are they starting one? What's going on here?
Well, unfortunately, Trump has surrounded himself with neocon warmonger advisors like Secretary of State and Interim National Security Advisor Marco Rubio, John Ratcliffe as CIA Director, Keith Kellogg as Ukraine's special envoy and other bad actors. And he's taking that misinformation and operationalizing it. You know, he's, if you're a president of the United States and you get fed misinformation every day, you're going to go ahead and move forward with that unless you have critical thinking capabilities and are able to counter that. Trump is, his gut feeling is almost always right. You know, he has these amazing, brilliant ideas, that he gets talked out of. You know, he wanted to get out of, Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria, you know, within the first few years of his first term. It never happened, unfortunately, because, he had a lot of, neocon cabinet members that talked him out of it. He wanted a comprehensive peace agreement with Russia. You know, that's this sweeping, you know, as sweeping as he's tried to make it this time, if not more so. And then, of course, they created the Trump-Russia hoax for the exact purpose to force him to be enemies with Russia and actually, you know, try to increase tensions with Russia. And what we got is, you know, a year after he left office, or a couple of years after he left office, was the Ukraine war, just a year and a month later. So, it's very sad because, you know, I am a strong Trump supporter, but I think he's making some huge mistakes to get us into World War III. And there's no reason for it. I mean, again, by his own definition, the war is senseless. It's ridiculous. The very fact it could get us into World War III is a travesty. And yet he's doing nothing to stop when all he really needs to do is sign a separate peace with Russia. And say, you know, here's the peace I negotiated, take it or leave it. If you don't sign it, we're pulling all our forces out for good and you're on your own. And it's over, you know, whether the war actually ends or not, the war between the U.S. and Russia would be over. The Russian nuclear threat to the U.S. would evaporate. And then if you wanted to, we could focus on China and all these, domestic, anti-fighter terrorists and the 100,000 PLA troops that are already in our own borders.
Right. Right. And on the topic of China, that's another video that, you know, maybe I'll go to in the next segment. We have limited time with you, but it was going viral today and it was a Chinese spokesperson, I believe, he was in Indonesia and he was saying, you know, he's bragging about the new weapons that they have. And he was saying, we have this one missile that's unstoppable. It can reach anywhere in the world in 20 minutes. It has 6 warheads plus a hydrogen bomb. And they said, in no uncertain terms, we're not going to start the fight, but we're going to finish it. We might not throw the first punch, but we're going to make sure you can't throw a second one. I mean, they are taking this very seriously. We're still, I mean, I feel like you've been coming on American Journal and now War Room for years. And it's like, we're still focusing on these hot spots of Russia, Ukraine, Iran, Israel, China, Taiwan. We're seeming to just inching closer and closer to conflict in all of these. Your article, from earlier in September talks about all of this. China showcases new missiles during military parade commemorating victory in World War II. How do all three of these conflicts tie together, and how are they influencing one another? Because again, I look at what Trump's doing with Russia, and there's not enough there for me to figure out what's going on. So I kind of look to these other things to go, well, is this about trying to do something with China? Is this about trying to keep Iran from connecting with Russia? It doesn't make any sense to me, so I'm looking at these other conflicts to see if they have an impact. What do you think, how do you think China and Iran play into what's going on with Ukraine and Russia?
Well, if you listen to the neoconservative propaganda line, they're saying that, you know, we need to show strength to Putin and not give in to, you know, his demands on Ukraine to essentially settle the conflict along the current lines. Because that would send some message of weakness to China. In fact, it's the exact opposite. China is the main benefactor from the continuation of the war in Ukraine. The longer we fight Russia and Ukraine, the bigger the window for them to invade Taiwan, with the U.S., you know, having tens of thousands of troops, bogged down in Eastern Europe against a Russia that could move against NATO, at any time because we keep provoking them to do so. So, you know, Russia, China, and Iran, the way they're linked is they're military allies. So they're all part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization that I've been warning against since 2001. And actually before that, before it existed, the Sino-Russian Alliance I've been talking about since, the mid-1990s, when it first, you know, started to, form in, 1996 in response to, Clinton's decision to expand NATO to Russia's borders in Ukraine. So, you know, they're all allies. Together they form an alliance along with, India and Pakistan, that has about 43% of the world's population. They have, you know, somewhere around 80% of the world's, nuclear weapons. Russia, of course, according to Ukraine's Ministry of Defense, has 16,000 nuclear weapons. U.S. has 3,800, less than that if you count our dismantled warheads that would take at least 2 years to put back together. So we're completely overmatched in terms of military industrial might. I mean, China alone, I've calculated that their industrial base is about 3.8 times larger than ours in terms of their defense industrial base. It's about 5 to 6 times greater. And you saw that in this parade earlier this month on September 3rd, where China gathered its closest allies, about 20 different heads of state, including Vladimir Putin. And a couple, one or two NATO members actually met with him as well during the same period, and showcased 76 different weapon systems, of which 46 were new. Wow. As in, they weren't operational until last year at the earliest, or just on the verge of being operational. And those weapons include multiple strategic nuclear missiles, including the DF-61 that has like 14 warheads, the DF-5C that has, I think, 12 warheads. Just by way of comparison, the U.S., Minuteman III, our ICBM that was built, first deployed when I was 1 year old, that's our only ICBM, and it only carries one warhead. So, Russia's in the process of deploying Sarmat ICBMs that have up to 50 warheads. China has admitted, nuclear missiles that have 12 to 14 warheads. So we're way behind the power curve. And our, nuclear deterrent is becoming woefully deficient to face both enemies at the same time. Now, if Trump were to pursue his brilliant plan to neutralize the Sino-Russian alliance with this geostrategic partnership with Russia, ending the war in Ukraine, withdrawing U.S. military forces from Eastern Europe, basically recognizing the Russian sphere of influence over Ukraine and the rest of the former Soviet Union, then that would essentially take Russia off the grand strategic chessboard of competition with China, and we could size our nuclear arsenal based on China's. Even then, we probably couldn't catch up. It would probably take us a decade or two to catch up with China. But with Russia in the mix, it's a hands-down loss. If there's a nuclear war, we will lose guaranteed. Or even if it's limited to conventional fight with cyber weapons, they could destroy us with cyber weapons alone.
And it's just it just seems so obvious. And again, you talk about this. You actually have a segment of your 1997 manuscript here where you predict this exact thing: the alliance between the Russian Federation and the Communist Chinese government. It just seems, I mean, you knew it back then. It seems even more obvious now that if there is this clash of cultures, this ultimate showdown between China and America, why would you not want Russia on your side? Like, what are they doing driving Russia into the hands of China? It is so obviously a tactical or strategic mistake at this point. It almost seems like it has to be on purpose. What is the reasoning behind this? Like, even if it's fallacious, like what are they even saying to justify this overall geopolitical strategy?
Well, essentially, it's neo-imperialism. It's, both liberal internationalists or the globalists and the deep state neocons, kind of have this unholy alliance. Essentially, they share the same neo-imperialist mindset, and that is that we should, the U.S. sphere of influence stretches across the entire world. Right. Only the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is exempt. So that means we have to push all of our troops to Russia's border in Eastern Europe. We need to massive military forces in the Western Pacific, kind of set up an Asian NATO. Really, we've done very poorly in that area because we don't even have any nuclear weapons aside from our two Ohio nuclear missile subs that are based in the Pacific. So we have no non-strategic warheads that are essentially based to deter China, that has perhaps 4,000 nuclear warheads at this point with their massive nuclear buildup. But it just doesn't make sense. If I've been saying for years now, if we had just invited Russia to join NATO, which Putin essentially offered, he admitted in this interview with Tucker Carlson on February 4th of, it was last year, that, he was open to joining NATO, and he wanted to know if that's something we would consider. And I think initially Clinton said, yeah, we might be willing to consider that. And they talked to his deep state advisors and they said, no, we can't do that. And then Bush, of course, said the same thing in 2002. And, you know, we pushed Russia into China's arms, just as I predicted we would in 1997. You know, it didn't take a real visionary, I don't think, to be able to see that. And we had all these folks on the foreign policy side from both parties that warned that, you know, if we expanded NATO to include Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic, you know, that bordered on Russia, that we would make Russia hostile again and kind of force them to become more militant in defense of their own national security interests.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I got a few more questions to ask you. Can you stay for a little bit into the next segment if we have to go to a commercial break in about 3 minutes? And I'm instead of choosing which question, I'd like to ask you both, because earlier today we got two pieces of news that I'd love your input on. One was that Trump, during his speech, I was under the impression he was saying he sent nuclear subs to the Russian coast. The article I was just looking at says U.S. put submarine hunters on Russia's doorstep. So this is a new, you know, development that apparently, you know, Trump is sending either submarines or submarine hunters to sort of menace Russia's ports. Do you know anything about this? And what would this signal to you? And if you were Russia, how would you interpret this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was back in July that he stated, he posted on Truth Social that he'd ordered at least a couple, nuclear missile submarines. Those are Ohio class ballistic missile submarines off, you know, closer to Russia. I mean, they're always on station. There's always two on station in the Pacific, two in the Atlantic. So whether, you know, if they're in range, if they can range Russia from, you know, the mid-Atlantic or mid-Pacific, then moving them close to the Russian coast probably didn't do much. I think it was, he was just making an idle threat. In terms of the submarine hunters, you know, Russia has six Yazan class nuclear missile submarines. These are cruise missile submarines rather than ballistic missile submarines. And these are submarines that are being uploaded with Zircon hypersonic missiles. Back in 2021, you know, as the Ukraine tensions started to ratchet up, President Putin made a very credible threat against Biden, saying that, you know, Russia could fire Zircon missiles from 200 miles off their coast. We wouldn't even detect them until it was too late. And, you know, within 5 minutes, DC would be, go up in a mushroom cloud and Biden wouldn't have time to escape on Air Force One. That's a very real capability. You know, I talked to, a former Assistant Secretary of Defense, Frank Gaffney, who said that a Russian submarine turned up in 2021 in the Chesapeake Bay, and we didn't detect it until it was already there. You know, so our submarine detection capabilities against Russia are pretty substandard, what they need to be, especially in the capital region. We should have all of our anti-submarine warfare assets deployed around the capital region just to ensure that there's, you know, Russia's not able to conduct a decapitation first strike that could potentially take out all three of our nuclear footballs, so we wouldn't be able to reestablish launch control of our nuclear arsenal for days, if not weeks. If not ever, that would allow Russia, China, and, you know, Iran, and North Korea to nuke every site they wanted in the U.S. with impunity. And there'd be nothing we could do to back it.
Well, isn't that troubling? And it really feels like we're playing with fire here. And, it's worth, you know, letting people know, like, this is not so far away as it may seem. I mean, it seems like Americans are fine with, you know, Ukrainians dying and Russians dying so far away. Maybe they need to be reminded, hey, there could be Russian subs right off your coast. And, you know, maybe we need more of the mindset of, you know, when that was happening with the Germans in World War II. I remember till a couple of years ago when my grandfather passed away. But up till then, he would talk about, you know, going to Miami as a little kid and seeing the Russian submarines, or at least knowing that they're out there and what that felt like. And it's like, maybe we need a little bit of that. Maybe we need to understand this is not just a distant thing that we can just throw money at and see who dies. It could come here very easily, especially if we don't handle this well. And it seems like America's walking a tightrope right now. More with David Pine on the other side, EMPTaskForce.us. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen, we have a new flash sale, just like we did with Ultra Methylene Blue. Buy one, get one free. Ultimate Creatine Powder. This is private labeled from one of the top certified companies in the U.S. that has their patented micro-creatine for higher level absorption. You want to be healthy, have clarity, lose weight, have way better stamina, better workouts. Even if you're not into working out, you're going to love creatine, ladies and gentlemen. And I know this is, I'm not, you know, selling something that I didn't know here. But why aren't you taking creatine? Every time I forget to take it over the years, I'm like, why am I taking creatine? And we've got the best. You get your free bottle of Ultimate Creatine Powder now. That's right. Buy one bottle of Ultimate Creatine and get another one free for a limited time only. Strengthen your body and sharpen your mind with Ultimate Creatine Powder, our microized creatine monohydrate powerhouse. Enhance strength and muscle growth. Improve mental stamina, increase workout intensity, accelerated recovery. And if it's good for working out, it's good for everything. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And don't miss out because Ultimate Creatine is selling out fast. This buy one, get one free offer could end any moment. Yeah, just like we did the buy one bottle of Ultra Methylene Blue Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. They don't have a lot of this, but they can get it more quickly. But it's close to selling out. But every couple of days this week, we're going to have buy one, get one free of some of the best-selling products. Get Ultimate Creatine. But I'm telling you, the big sleeper, people bought a lot of it. Now the reviews are coming in. Now people are buying a lot of it. And that's our bovine colostrum, one of the strongest brands out there. And it's 2,000 milligram per serving. It just does miraculous things. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com and keep us on the air.
Now, back to our program.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I didn't know he was taking our Ultra Methylene Blue, so I said, oh, with all our guests, we asked him to take it, and you just gave me your brief testimony, so I would look, because I mean, this isn't BS. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. takes it. It's good for your cells. If you're on SSRIs, you can't take it. It's very serious. We have the strongest, and it funds this operation. You want to get it at thealexjonesstore.com. Medical grade, USP grade, the best. Ultra Methylene Blue. So you sort of give me your testimony saying you love it. I said, hold on. I don't want to know. I want you to tell people on air, William. So when did you get it? What was the effect?
So I've been a health nut, people call me, all my life.
Well, you look super young for your age. So.
And so I thank God that I've been healthy. And when I take most supplements, a lot of people say, oh, you'll feel, you know, this big surge. And normally I don't. I just think, okay, I'm doing something right for my body and for my brain. And with Methylene Blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy. It helps me I keep a lot of late hours. I'm talking to people over in Europe or over in other continents. And so my biorhythms get all messed up, and so it really helps me with my sleep. And
well, and be honest though, because you're saying your doctors, others told you to do it, just like mine did 6 years ago. I got it USP, didn't really have the effect. My wife liked it, so she's been on it. We tried different brands. This one, I'm not trying to differentiate, it's just true. It's been way stronger for me. If you do have other brands you took that are as good or better, I want to know, because if there's something better, we'll go with them.
I haven't found anything better.
Now, back to our program.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the War Room final segment here with David Pine. He's the director of the National EMP Task Force, emptaskforce.us. You can find his Substack, and I encourage you to go read these articles, dpine.substack.com. That's dpyne.substack.com. I thought I had one more article to ask you about, but I realize I in fact have two. The first is this one from Daily Mail. Mystery fleet of U.S. Air Force tankers crossing Atlantic stirs echoes of Iran strike ahead of secret military meeting. So this was yesterday. Today it's been reported these same tankers refueled and are now traveling to Qatar. Flight trackers have spotted a fleet of U.S. air tankers crossing the Atlantic Now they're en route to Qatar. This, of course, happened right before we attacked. We bombed Iran with the big assault there. Does this mean it's happening again? I mean, have you seen this, David? And what is your take on what's happening with these air tankers?
No, I hadn't seen that previously, but that is very alarming because, as you mentioned, that this air refueling bridge is exactly what happened before the unprovoked U.S. Bomber strike on Iran. And I've been predicting, you know, and Trump's been warning himself, you know, just I think 4 days after he declared, you know, one of his greatest legacies would be, you know, the ceasefire between ending the war with the U.S., Israel, and Iran. And then 4 days later, he said, asked if he would bomb Iran again. He said he absolutely would. So he's had this in his back pocket and in the back of his mind to do. But this seems like a very, almost a bipolar thing for him to do, you know, at the very time he's talking about establishing an eternal peace in the Middle East, you know, with his 20-point peace plan, which is, you know, it's problematic in some ways, but it's really quite good in many ways, certainly much more realistic, still a little bit unreal, you know, unrealistic, but much more, you know, reasonable in terms of, you know, allowing the Palestinians to stay in Gaza and not force them to, you know, be ethnically cleansed as this previous plan had.
Yeah, I liked what I saw of the plan so far. And again, we've got this joint statement by the foreign ministers of Qatar, Jordan, UAE, Indonesia, Pakistan, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt all putting out statements in support of this plan. And I guess it's just up to Hamas whether they accept it or not. But I mean, what do you think the likelihood is that they're going to look favorably on this? I mean, it strips them of control. It basically totally disarms them. They want to have an international body, the Board of Peace, that they say will be chaired by Trump, but I think Tony Blair is also eyeing that position. I guess it's a new British mandate in Gaza. I mean, it seems like a strange conclusion to this conflict. What do you think the likelihood is that this plan actually gets put into motion?
Well, I think there is a chance that Hamas will accept it with exceptions. I mean, you have to go back, you know, every ceasefire plan that we've offered, they've accepted with limited conditions. And, you know, we've said it's an ultimatum. You either take it or leave it. And then Israel bombs them and invades them again. So, that's kind of the most likely possibility. You know, Trump only gave them, I think, a 72-hour to 96-hour window to accept the deal that's on the table. You know, it's requiring the return of the hostages within 72 hours of Israeli acceptance of the deal. Well, that was yesterday. So they have 48 hours to, you know, in accordance with the plan itself to return the hostages, or else, Israel, I guess, you know, keeps, terror bombing them and you know, blockading them, you know, with a starvation blockade and it continues the Netanyahu plan to permanently occupy and control of Gaza. But, you know, in many ways, just looking at the plan, it looks not like a British mandate. It looks like a U.S. mandate because it doesn't provide for the President of the United States to be the chairman of the so-called peace board that will control and govern Gaza. It provides for Trump personally to control Gaza, which means that after he's president, he may still be the top honcho in this interim Gazan government, which is very unique. We haven't seen anything like that in U.S. history that I've seen before.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I guess maybe during like the U.S. Spanish War, we had to, you know, figure out how to deal with even having colonies. So there was that. But yeah, it's a very sort of unique approach that I wonder how it's going to go. And I wonder how this plays into, the coming conflict with Iran, the ongoing, you know, friction with Iran. Do you think it's more likely that war with Iran kicks off if Hamas rejects the proposal or accepts it?
Yeah, you know, the Gaza conflict is really the instigator for the entire proxy war between, you know, the U.S. and Israel on one side and Iran on the other. So if Hamas accepts the deal, I mean, that really eliminates any impetus on the Iranian side to want to attack Israel in the near future. You know, really all of these attacks, you know, other than October 7th, of course, which was certainly Iranian, you know, backed and approved of in advance, have been Israeli attacks, on Iran and its proxies. So essentially, you know, Iran has been wanting peace nonstop since October 7th. You know, they wanted to support the attack, the terrorist attack. It was brutal, but it, you know, killed all less than 1,200 Israelis civilians. And then Israel, of course, has killed off about 55,000 Gazan or Palestinian civilians in response, which is about 46 times more than Hamas killed. You know, not, obviously Israel was fully justified to go after Hamas, they've only killed about 9,000 Hamas fighters, you know, in the last 2 years. And Hamas is actually 25% larger in terms of the number of fighters they have than at the beginning of the war. So, you know, while Israel has completely pulverized Gaza and turned, you know, as Trump stated, you know, just turned it into the landscape of the moon, basically Hiroshima, you know, Gaza wide, in terms of actual military successes against Hamas, they haven't done that great.
That's very interesting because I'd heard that French President Macron said that Hamas has not been, you know, militarily defeated, basically saying they're still at the same strength they were. But you're actually saying they're even stronger, 25% more fighting men in Hamas than at the beginning of the war?
That's according to Israeli figures. So Hamas had 32,000, and maybe they're including Islamic Jihad. So with Islamic Jihad, Hamas and Islamic Jihad together had 40,000. So if they include Islamic Jihad, then they're at the same level. So, I mean, if you measure a war by how many troops the enemy fields on the, you know, the field of battle, at best case, it's been a wash, and that's 2 years later. You know, I mean, Israel has massive regional superpower supremacy over, you know, over Hamas. Hamas has no combat aircraft. They have no helicopters. They have no tanks. They have no armored vehicles. I mean, they're just really kind of almost a guerrilla force with rockets, you know, some short-range rockets they can fire off at Israel and not a whole lot else. So, you know, you would expect Israel to have completely wiped them out by now. But based on the record, it's very unlikely that they'll ever be able to wipe them out at this rate. And if they can, it would take 2 to 3 years at least to do it.
Well, so then that begs the question, you know, if they don't accept this ultimatum from Trump and, you know, they say you accept this or Israel's going really full force in Gaza, well, aren't they doing that already? I mean, what would that even look like? What more power do they have to pour into this fight? Nuclear weapons, I guess?
That's about it. That's about all they have. And they're not going to use a nuke that close to their territory, right, even though Lindsey Graham and, you know, far right Israeli politicians have been calling for that. I mean, they could, if they used like a mini nuke, they could do it. But, you know, it would still be a risk of fallout on Israeli territory that could sicken Israeli civilians. So that seems very unlikely. It's basically not going to happen, but, yeah, I mean, this deal that Trump has outlined, this is the best, you know, in terms of if you really care about Israeli security, this is the best, if not the only way to accomplish it. It has to be a deal that gives Hamas full amnesty. It has to give, self-government back to the Palestinians. It has to involve the full Israeli military withdrawal of all their troops from Gaza. And it's very unclear. I would say that it's clear that Netanyahu, while saying he accepts the peace plan, he clearly stated he's like Israel will continue to provide security essentially indefinitely for Gaza, which means that basically he's not going to honor the plan and pull Israeli troops out. And the problem is Hamas is not going to lay down their arms to Israeli invaders and foreign occupiers. They'll lay down their arms and surrender to, you know, a multinational Arab force of peacekeepers, but not to Israeli forces. And so if Israel doesn't withdraw, Hamas won't disarm and the war will continue indefinitely.
Yeah. And we actually have that video. We'll go to clip number 23 here, because this was a video that Benjamin Netanyahu put out, and he put it out in Hebrew, but people translated it. And yeah, he seems to be saying, don't worry about the thing we just signed with Trump. We're never going to leave Gaza. And, you know, this is the problem with having Israel as an ally is, like, you know, Iran recently just rejected talks with America because, well, last time that they tried, you know, America bombed them and Israel bombed them, and then Israel's bombing negotiators in Qatar. And it's like, how are we going to get any agreements with these people, with any of these groups, when we can't be trusted to uphold our end of the bargain? I mean, we just routinely destroy our own reputation with the help of Israel. And it's like, yeah, how are you going to ever have peace when you've proven yourself so untrustworthy? Why would they ever give up their weapons? Even, you know, with the agreement to have an Arab peacekeeping force, how do you even trust that? But I want to go to this video by Netanyahu. So this was after he visited with Trump. He put out this message, and I'll read along the subtitles here. So he said, Prime Minister, how do you sum up the visit? He says it was an excellent visit, the beginning at the UN as well as the ending in Washington. This is my fourth visit to Washington since President Trump took office, about every 2 months. This is a historic visit. Instead of Hamas isolating us, we turned the tables and isolated Hamas. Now the entire world, including the Arab and Muslim world, is pressuring Hamas to accept the terms we set together with President Trump to release all hostages, both living and deceased, while the IDF remains in most of the strip. Who would have believed this? After all, people say you must accept Hamas's term, get everyone out. The IDF should withdraw. Hamas can recover, and it can rehabilitate the strip. No way, that's not happening. On the contrary, and President Trump added that if Hamas refuses, he will give Israel full backing to complete the military operation and eliminate them. That's why I think from every perspective, it was an excellent visit. So, again, we can, we'll keep going here. They say, do you agree to a Palestinian state? He says, absolutely not. It's also written in the agreement. But there's one thing that did say that we would strongly oppose a Palestinian state. President Trump also said it. He also understands it. He also said the UN, there would be a huge reward for terrorism and danger to the state of Israel. Of course, we won't agree to it. So there, you know, he seems to say that, the IDF is not getting out of Gaza, not getting out of Hamas-controlled territory, which, of course, is completely contradictory to the, you know, thing that was signed. So are we missing something here? Do we mistranslate that, do you think? Or, you know, do you think Netanyahu is sort of saying, yeah, whatever, we're going to stay there anyway? That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people have been speculating that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been pulling Trump's strings on Middle East war policy. And I think that's accurate, unfortunately. I think Trump's, you know, an outstanding president on so many levels and so many different areas. But he's allowing himself to be misled, both in terms of the war in Gaza, you know, Iran and, Russia-Ukraine policy. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I predicted this, that Netanyahu would never agree to pull his troops out of Gaza. He actually did pull them out in accordance with the January 19th, Biden negotiated, but essentially Steve Witkoff pressured right. Ceasefire agreement. And that was a great deal as well. And, of course, Israel broke that agreement and engaged in a full-scale invasion occupation of Gaza in, I think, early March of this year. And, Netanyahu, he's planned this all along. There's been talk that there may, in fact, it was Charlie Kirk that talked about how maybe not Netanyahu, but someone at a very senior level of the Israeli military or political leadership ordered an IDF stand down just prior to the Hamas terrorist attacks. And as Charlie Kirk stated, I've been to Israel as well as part of a U.S. Department of Defense delegation back in 2001. It's a garrison state. It's, right. There's troops everywhere. You see them everywhere. Men and women. Women get drafted. It's, they've got 11 times more troops, including reservists, than Hamas does. It's 57 times larger than Gaza is. 400 nuclear weapons, the fourth largest nuclear power in the world behind the United States. So, the idea that, all these terrorists could just cross the border, you know, when Gaza is on lockdown 24/7, it's basically been a concentration camp ever since they imposed the starvation blockade in 2007. It's really just, unbelievable, yeah. that could have happened. And so you have to assume that there might be, more to it than everyone believes.
Right. It certainly seems like, especially with the 6-hour, 7-hour stand down in a country that takes 45 minutes to cross on in a helicopter. I mean, it makes no sense on the face of it, which is why we try to dig a little deeper. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about, and I haven't really looked into this too much, but I've seen some images that are pretty incredible. In fact, I think we can play some of them as B-roll. They're released by Iran. Iran says it has documents linked to Israel's nuclear program. Iranian state television on Wednesday broadcast images of documents and footage, it says relates to Israel's nuclear activities, which Israel, Tehran's sworn enemy, has never officially confirmed or denied. The documentary showed copies of passports to identify Israeli scientists, along with information on the location of military sites. And it seemed like, to me, at first blush, this was just sort of a threat, sort of a shot across the bow, going, oh, we know you have a nuclear facilities, and we've been to them, and we have some of the documents from them. You know, we're maybe closer than you realize. What do you make of this publication by Iran of all this seemingly valid information about the Israeli nuclear program?
Yeah, I mean, the Israeli nuclear arsenal is one of the worst kept secrets in the world. I mean, everyone knows that they have nukes. They don't officially admit it because then they'd be subjected to massive international sanctions. It's the same reason that Iran won't admit the existence of their nuclear arsenals, because they don't want the sanctions. Mm-hmm. I think Iran is completely right in stating that. As I mentioned, according to my sources, Iran has more nukes than France, Britain, India, or Pakistan, or North Korea, the wow. fourth largest nuclear power in the world. And it's a country of it's a country of 7 million Jews. You know, it's a lot of people don't realize that. There's only 7 million Jews in Israel.
Right.
I think that's a total population. I think it's 7.6 actually, out of 9.9 million people. And, they are immensely powerful. The whole Netanyahu plan, the war plan, is to make them the regional superpower, able to bomb Iran with impunity. And Trump's been going along with that. And, a lot of foreign policy realist scholars, other than myself, have been saying, the thing that makes that region the most unstable is because Israel has too much power. If Iran had a declared nuclear arsenal, then they could balance out Israeli power, and Israel would stop attacking all its neighbors potentially. So, I wish Iran didn't have nuclear weapons. I think they do. There's certainly a good argument to that. And I think if the U.S. had better relations with Iran, then less close relations with Israel in pursuit of, the U.S. Kind of America first foreign policy, then we would greatly benefit, and we could restore peace and stability in the Middle East.
I think for the sake of the earth, it's incumbent on us that we put a stop to all this madness. Well, thank you so much for joining us, David Pyne. You can follow his Substack once again at dpyne.substack.com. That's dpyne.substack.com and emptaskforce.us. It's very, I feel like every time we have you on, we're like on the edge of the cliff. We haven't fallen over yet. So hopefully we'll have you on again soon for the newest developments. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Thanks, Aaron. Harrison, always a pleasure.
Thank you. All right, folks. David Pyne, dpyne.substack.com. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com is your one-stop shop for all things patriotic and healthy and good and loving and beautiful. Yes, folks, thealexjonesstore.com. You get a hat, a T-shirt, or a supplement that will change your life forever for the better. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Right now, the Ultimate Creatine Powder is buy one, get one free. Buy one, get one free for the Ultimate Creatine Powder at TheAlexJonesStore.com. You know we always have the highest quality and best supplements in whatever style that we offer them. Ultimate Creatine Powder is no different. Sports muscle growth and brain health, a dietary supplement that will knock your socks off. Go now to TheAlexJonesStore.com and take advantage of the 2-for-1 sale. Buy one, get one free. Kind of like fireworks at an old fireworks stand. I got some breaking news here that I want to get to, because this video looks incredible, and it is a wonderful response, in my opinion, to the absurdity that's been taking place in Broadview, Illinois, just outside Chicago, where basically the local police have been allowing these so-called protesters to riot and attack ICE agents and surround the federal building, try to de-arrest deportation subjects. Well, Trump is responding in a very interesting way. Over 300 federal agents, some rappelling down from the roof, stormed a building in Chicago. Let's go now to this video. This is from News Nation and just broke minutes ago. Let's watch.
led 300 federal officials to that apartment complex. Some even rappelled down from Blackhawks onto the rooftop in order to help secure that perimeter. Now, they were searching for suspected members of the violent Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua. Of course, TDA has been designated as a terrorist organization under the Trump administration. Now, it was the biggest show of force that we've ever seen on the ground here. We had agencies, FBI, Border Patrol, ICE, and ATF all involved here, and they were all looking for targets in that same exact building. It was a five-story building. It was a tall task for them, and anything could have gone wrong. But luckily, the operations went pretty smoothly. Preliminary reports show that about 30 illegal immigrants were arrested in this operation, some of them suspected Tren de Aragua. Now, we talked with Chief Gregory Bovino, who's running the operations on the ground for many of these ops in Chicago, and he had some words for people that are pushing back against his operations. Take a listen.
How about you lived in the apartment next door to Tren de Aragua members that are trafficking in prostitution, guns, drugs, and taking advantage of American citizens in a violent way? Why don't you live next to them and then see how much of a Gestapo or a Nazi we are?
You love hearing them respond directly like that, and it just is so absurd. I mean, I see protesters protesting against ICE saying ICE is engaged in human trafficking. They're engaged in the exact, no, they're stopping the human trafficking, you absolute morons. And it really is getting to be a war zone out there. Not to overuse that phrase, but you see the videos, it looks like a war zone. Right there, you just had Black Hawk helicopters rappelling on. I mean, they are doing like full-fledged military operations on American streets. Now, typically, we would be against anything even approaching something like that. But this is just how bad it's gotten. It's not even an option anymore. Now, you know, if these guys start going after citizens and, you know, taking guns away, okay, now we're going to have a problem. But what we have is a infestation of these criminal gangs that are just acting with total impunity and committing the most heinous crimes. And we have to go in and get them out. So this is what you have a military for. I mean, this is why you train the guys and give them the equipment so they can take care of the bad guys who are injuring or otherwise harming innocent Americans. So, yes, deploy the Blackhawks, deploy the, rappel teams, get in there and clear these people out, because every day we don't do that is another day Americans are being victimized. And it goes on and on. I've got so many stories here. FBI arrests four illegal aliens hiding in Portland home after one of them aims a laser at Border Patrol helicopter. I mean, how stupid do you have to be? You've got four illegal aliens living in one home. He steps out on his porch and starts aiming lasers, trying to take down the Black Hawk helicopter. They go find the source of the laser pointer, ends up to be basically an illegal stash house, and they find four people, all of them illegal, and literally trying to take down a helicopter. I mean, you can blind a pilot like that, and it's extremely dangerous. And we have this. I don't even have time to go to this video. It is kind of hilarious, though. I guess we can go to a clip 38. It's pretty fast. This is a car wash owner who gets tackled, arrested for impeding ICE arrest. He's now filed a $50 million claim. Here he is trying to body slam an ICE officer and getting knocked to the ground for it. Now he's suing for $50 million. My question is, why is he not in jail? Why is he not in jail? He's running a car wash where his entire staff is illegal. When ICE officers come to arrest the illegal aliens, this guy starts fighting him. He throws his body in the way and gets knocked to the ground and then tries to grab the ICE officers as they, you know, take away the person for deportation. Why is he not arrested? He's now filing a $50 million claim and it may go through. I mean, he gets the right judge. We're going to pay him $50 million. He should be in jail. His reward should be being arrested for interfering with federal officers. That's a crime. Arrest him. Throw him in jail. Problem solved.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it. And I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it. Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week
right,
to get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day
right,
and pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!